Blog Talk Radio.
Now, PW Torch and Spreaker bring you the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show. It's time to talk this week's WWE Friday Night SmackDown on Fox.
It is not exaggerating, Mike, to say that this is one of the biggest days in professional wrestling history. Vince McMahon announces via Twitter, of course, because it's 2022, that he is choosing to retire because at age 77, it's time. Not exactly how he had talked about retirement before, which was, A, I'm never going to die, and B, if I do, I'll retire then. So obviously, this seems connected to all the scandals and allegations of sexual improprieties over the decades. And SmackDown tonight opened with Stephanie McMahon, the daughter of Vince McMahon, the heir apparent since her age was single digits. She made that clear to Shane when she was young. This was going to be her moment, and it was. She stood in the ring as the new co-CEO of WWE, along with Nick Khan, and announced with, while she choked up, that her father had announced his retirement. The crowd cheered, chanted for Vince, and thank you, Vince. And then we're off to the races for a, well, rather ordinary episode of SmackDown thereafter. Mike, your take on the big story and your take, because this is a SmackDown post-show, on how WWE handled it by having Stephanie make that announcement in the ring at the top of the show.
Yeah, it's really a day that you knew to some degree, in some way, shape, or form had to happen eventually, but really not in this way. And I don't know that I ever thought that he was actually going to step down. I thought maybe he would just be in that chair until the day that he died, and that would be it. But, you know, as more things came out in these recent weeks and the walls kind of closed in, this became a very real possibility. And even still, it came as a shock to see that today. But at this point, as is the case in sports and many other fields, sometimes when you feel like you're about to be, forced out, you quote unquote retire so that doesn't happen. And I think that's what happened here, with Vince, obviously. As far as the, opening the SmackDown, I think a lot of people kind of reacted negatively to it on social media. I think people in the crowd in Boston seem to react to it positively. And that's really kind of been the dichotomy through the entire situation with Vince McMahon. You get one group of people saying things on social media, and then you have Vince showing up on these shows, as he did a few times after the allegations first came out, and hamming up for the crowd and getting cheered, and people are bowing and people are loving him. And that's kind of how it is in professional wrestling a lot of the time. So it doesn't surprise me that they did what they did. And honestly, I don't have a huge problem with it. Vince McMahon, who is an icon of the business, probably the biggest icon of the business. It was his last day in the business. And Stephanie McMahon, who views him in a different light than somebody from the outside looking in would view him, wanted to celebrate her father, obviously was moved to tears. It's a huge day for her in a lot of respects. So I understand why they did it. I can also understand why people who obviously have issues with the allegations and everything against Vince McMahon is, I think that you should, might not like it as well.
The Stephanie McMahon having a moment to talk about her dad, Kay, with, but I completely get the reaction that people have. Stephanie, was with her dad in the courtroom. I was in the courtroom with them during the Vince McMahon trial. I covered that trial from jury selection through closing arguments, and Stephanie was there for her dad and felt that her dad was wrong, or at least expressed that wronged by the federal government indicting him on those steroid distribution and possession charges, and has spoken about that on TV. And from that moment on, she's been there for her dad publicly. And the McMahon family legacy is larger than Stephanie and Vince. It's larger than Vince. And frankly, it's larger than the allegations against Vince that clearly led to this. It doesn't mean they're more important, but in a WWE television show context, this was a major symbolic end of the longest running, most successful, most influential wrestling promoter of all time. And the daughter has been named the CEO to replace him, not interim anymore, co-CEO. And I allot her an emotional moment because some of those, you know, tears or choking up might have been, frankly, disappointment in her dad. Mm-hmm. And maybe that was showing up as she was leading the crowd in the thank you Vince chant, which, by the way, she didn't initiate. The crowd did. And she laughed and said, I'm getting to that. Wait a second. Let me get through a couple more lines. This is tough. People on the outside might think, why are wrestling fans cheering Vince McMahon? And I get that, but I'm not at all surprised. Some of them just aren't following the news. And second of all, it's just, it's pro wrestling fans and they're cheering what Vince McMahon meant to them or what WWE means to them. And Vince McMahon is the leader of the company that they've chosen to spend an evening paying money to watch. So I'm not like saying, wow, I would have voted for Stephanie to be there to lead a chant of thank you, Vince. But, and I understand the outrage, but I think the totality of this moment and Stephanie being his daughter and being there to not make excuses or show support. She didn't say he's been wrong. She didn't seem bitter about the circumstance. It was just, we're saying goodbye. And it was brief, and it didn't feel like there was an agenda beyond he's gone. And he contributed a lot. So I didn't get like a six. I was less comfortable with Titus O'Neil being sent out on Monday to, you know, do PR work to speak as sort of a vessel for Vince McMahon that no matter what I did, just remember all the good things, all the good times I brought you. Mm-hmm. This felt like Stephanie had agency in this and she didn't do anything she didn't want to do. And so it was kind of my reaction to that. There's so much to digest here. And by the way, I was recording the weekly VIP exclusive podcast, Everything with Rich Fan and Wade Keller this afternoon. A few minutes into the show, Rich interrupted me and says, Wade, I don't interrupt you much, but there's big news. And he told me live on the air. And my reaction was live on the podcast. And we kept that recording. And then we talked for another roughly hour and a half in depth about Vince McMahon while we were doing the podcast. I'm texting and messaging people and relaying what I'm hearing and different reactions that I'm hearing from people on background who are involved in WWE or know him. And so that's available for VIP members. If you just want to dive in and go VIP, you can hear my in-depth thoughts with Rich analyzing the ramifications of that. We'll get into some of that here, of course, but we also are here to talk SmackDown and take live calls. But if you are thinking you just want an intense dose of Vince McMahon talk, the 96-minute, 90 minutes of which is covering Vince McMahon, Everything with Rich and Wade VIP podcast is available. So pwtorch.com/govip is the way to sign up and listen to that show. Mike, where were you when you heard the news?
I was on my daily shift for Bleacher Report. I was just working on other stuff at the time, other sports related stuff. And then the news broke and I was running point on that. And then right as that was happening, also I was running point on the rumors and the reports regarding Brock Lesnar as well. So I wrote articles on both of those situations. So SmackDown went from ordinary to, you know, something to talk about by the end of the show. My day was kind of similar in that regard, I guess.
Yes. This will throw a twist into anybody's schedule whose job is to cover and analyze pro wrestling. I mean, there's always breaking news, but I don't want to compare, you know, deaths to this announcement, but in terms of non-tragedies that involve deaths, this is as big and in some ways bigger, in most ways bigger than WWF buying WCW or the announcement of Nitro or Tony Khan and the EVPs announcing the formation of AEW or Vince McMahon's not guilty verdict in the steroid trial back in 94. I mean, it's just, you know, I mean, we can run through all the big stories, but I mean, Vince McMahon running this company for as long as he has. Well, by the way, one thing that I think is worth note is Raw's coming to MSG on Monday. Vince McMahon would have wanted his final WWE show to be at Madison Square Garden. I mean, to me, when they just had ran the ad during SmackDown and at MSG on Monday, I was like, this was not Vince McMahon's choice to retire today, because he would have wanted to retire Tuesday next week. He would have wanted to have one last chance to be the guy in charge at MSG. To have to leave 3 days before that tells me this was not his choice, that this was stretched out as long as possible. Wrestlers were told a couple weeks ago, Vince is here to stay. Something, you know, then the Wall Street Journal second major article came out, and who knows what else is on the verge of coming out or what, but something stopped Vince McMahon from being able to retire after Raw on Monday. That, to me, is a serious consideration to when processing the timing of this. Otherwise, I wouldn't think a lot of it, but MSG is just so important to him, and it's just got to kill him that there's going to be a WWE show and he's not officially part of the organization. And I know there's people who think, oh, he's not really – maybe there's people out there, I haven't seen him, who are saying he's not really gone or he'll be back or he's going to shadow book. I mean, the odds of that are just infinitesimal right now, given the context of everything and how much trouble everybody would be in if that came out to be true. So anyway, your thoughts on that MSG angle, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I hadn't really thought about that, but there's no question about it. I mean, MSG for so many years was WWE's home base. It's, you know, the world's most famous arena, and Vince McMahon, as we know, has always held it in such high regard. And, you know, even without the MSG factor, I mean, I think there's no question about it, just based on Vince's actions and what he has said and what has been said within WWE, that he had absolutely no plans on stepping down. Again, he was defiant in the face of a lot of this stuff, appearing on the show on the same day that these allegations came out, essentially, and continuing to do so on multiple occasions and soaking in the adulation of the crowd and all of that. You know, he was going to fight this to the bitter end for as long as he possibly could. And I think that what happened today tells us that he reached the bitter end, probably was served with an ultimatum of some kind, that either you do this or, you know, we have to make this a big public to-do and say that you were removed from power. And a lot of times with people in these types of situations who have an ego and who have pride, as you would if you've built something to the degree of WWE, you'd rather go out on your own terms, or at least saying that it's your own terms, even if in actuality that's not really the case. Happens a lot in sports with coaches, quote-unquote, retiring or stepping down, because, you know, we all know in reality they were going to get fired if that didn't happen. So I think this is really the same type of situation for Vince McMahon.
Absolutely. Yeah, as you're talking, I mean, I'm just thinking about all the angles, all the ramifications of this, and all the various topics covered that I covered earlier with Rich in that 90-minute podcast. And one of the questions we had was, who's going to run the show now? Who's going to be at Gorilla? And I checked with a wrestler tonight who was at SmackDown, and they told me it was Bruce Pritchard, which isn't a big surprise. But Bruce Pritchard was running Gorilla tonight without Vince. Vince wasn't there. But Vince McMahon and Bruce Pritchard were close. Vince is the one who kept bringing Bruce, you know, back, and Bruce is one of his guys. So, you know, I don't think Bruce is particularly tight with Paul Levesque. I don't know his dynamic with Stephanie or Nick Khan, but, you know, he's somebody who might not be around. You know, there could be a pretty big shakeup and a reshuffling. We didn't get a lot different on SmackDown tonight. You know, this was, you know, they were still the new vicious Viking Raiders. You know, we still got a match that didn't take place without the announcers acknowledging why in that Lacey Evans-Aaliyah match. You know, people get attacked before matches all the time, and the ref says, are you okay? Ring the bell, the match starts. They just ignored that and announced what happened next week. That's stuff that we always blame Vince McMahon for. Well, Vince wasn't around today, and, you know, the top writers, Ed Koski and Ryan Ward, they didn't go, all right, major changes, or Triple H didn't, Stephanie didn't go, here's some things we're going to stop doing. But over time, that's going to happen. You know, we're going to see things that change, but some of that is who ends up in charge of creative and overseeing creative. And yeah, but tonight, do you agree, Mike? This was a business as usual SmackDown, aside from the Brock drama, which we will get into next.
Yeah, absolutely. And this was kind of what my expectation was. When you have a huge change like this, there's not going to be a change in philosophy overnight most of the time. It's a transition phase. It's going to take, you know, place over the course of days, weeks, months, maybe even a year or more, to go from somebody who's been in that seat for 40 years and transition out of that. It's not going to look immediately different. My expectations was that Bruce Prichard was going to be in that spot. Obviously, he's been one of Vince's closest confidants for many years. For a time, it was, you know, Vince, Bruce, and Pat Patterson booking all the shows. So I think that out of anybody, that's who Vince would have wanted to be in that spot, out of the available options at least. And he has, obviously, Bruce has a ton of experience being in gorilla position, timing matches, all that type of stuff. So that's not surprising to me at all. But, you know, the point that you bring up is an interesting one. I don't know that he's close to Triple H. We know that at least at some time he didn't have the greatest relationship with Stephanie, because that's what led to his ouster from WWE. So in the same situation with Kevin Dunn as well, there's all kinds of speculation, all kinds of rumors about him not necessarily being in the good graces of Triple H and Stephanie like he was with Vince McMahon. So maybe a change is made there at some point too. But I think that for now, you know, it's a situation where they're kind of just in a holding pattern and waiting until they make these big changes. Like when Vince took over from his father, you know, he made sure that he took care of people like Gorilla Monsoon and that type of thing. Maybe it's a similar situation with guys like Bruce Prichard and Kevin Dunn. I don't really know. But for now, at least, I would expect those people who are close to Vince and those people who he's comfortable with being in those spots, being the ones that are running the show, at least in the immediate future.
All right, let's pause and introduce ourselves in the show, and then get to calls and emails and more conversation, including the drama with Brock Lesnar. This is the Wade Keller Pro Wrestling Post Show for Friday, July 22nd, 2022, a day that we'll remember. And I am Wade Keller, the host of the program. Every moment of my career covering professional wrestling full-time has involved everything that I report and talk about in some way filtering through Vince McMahon as the guy on top of the industry. You know, if New Japan is running a pay-per-view, what does Vince McMahon think of it? You know, I mean, it's like even the stuff that has nothing to do with him in some way had to do with him. Is there somebody on this show? Is there a production technique that somebody will point out to him? And to the obvious stuff, competing with WCW, competing with Tony Khan, NXT versus Dynamite, all of that. And that, by all indications, is over. And this SmackDown was different for me to cover because I had to, for the first time in almost 35 years covering pro wrestling, I wasn't thinking about, oh, did Vince like what Madcap Moss did there? How well Theory's performance changed how Vince sees him? You know, that kind of, or Raquel Gonzalez with that spot, will he hold that against her? You know, whatever. Like, it's going to take a while to break from that. And so, a big day. The other voice you hear is Mike Chiari from Ring Rust Radio and Bleacher Report. It's been a while since Mike and I have done a show together. It is happenstance that Mike happened to be scheduled for tonight. You were scheduled before the Vince news, but I'm really glad you're here. You can also bring kind of a mainstream sports perspective from your work covering other sports and how other scandals that affected owners, coaches, GMs, as you've already referenced, that transition and how that might relate to what's going on in WWE now. Mike, welcome to the co-host chair.
I'm really happy to be here. Thanks so much for having me. And as you said, you know, you reached out to me this week about doing a show at some point soon. I said I'm free this Friday. This was days ago. And that it just happened to be one of the biggest days in the history of professional wrestling, pretty much, that I get to come on here and talk about it, which I'm happy about because, you know, my podcast isn't until Tuesday. So, you know, I kind of had some pent up feelings and thoughts that I wasn't going to be able to get out for a while. So really happy to be here with you and talk about this crazy day.
It's great to have you here. We'll talk about your podcast and your other work coming up in a little bit. I do want to give out the phone numbers and the email because we invite listener participation on the show. And the way to do that is to call 347-215-8558. That's 347-215-8558. And when you call, push 1 on your keypad. That flags you on our switchboard and says that you want to be part of the conversation. If you've already called in, we'd love to get your thoughts on Vince McMahon and if it's going to affect how you look at WWE, if you're more or less likely to watch, would you have been among the people chanting, thank you, Vince, or not, if you were in the building tonight? Curious to hear that. So 347-215-8558. and push 1 in your keypad. The other way to participate is via email, and you can email WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. That's WadeKellerPodcast@pwtorch.com. I want to move to phone calls right away here after our introduction there. So let's do it and begin with Dom in Cleveland. Dom, thanks for calling up. Your thoughts on SmackDown and Vince McMahon? Go ahead, Dom. Are you there?
Oh, sorry,
can you hear
that.
Me,
I
Mike? I want to make sure
muted.
It's okay.
I can hear you.
Oh,
no, it's
yeah,
my
good.
Fault.
Okay, great.
Yeah, no, I
no
never
problem.
Know if you guys are able to hear maybe here on the other end, so I usually keep my phone muted. I just wanted to thank you guys for taking my call on this historic evening. You know, I do listen just about every show, and I want to call, but I'm usually too lazy to. I had to do it tonight. I had to hit one and get on. So, yes, I didn't plan to talk much on Vince, but since he did encourage the callers to go ahead and at least make their opinion on it, I've mentioned it many times. I'm a shareholder. I've been investing in the company for almost a decade now. Always had the utmost confidence in Vince as a businessman, as a guy that can get stuff done. But I have had waning confidence in him creatively, at least for the last maybe 4 to 5 years. And I see that from the people that I try to bring back to watch the show. I see that from family members that it's the same old thing, the same old thing. So I think that this is the opportunity for us to get a breath of fresh air into the business from a creative perspective. And I definitely have the utmost of confidence in both Stephanie and Nick Khan in running the business at the corporate level. Both of those guys. I mean, I'm so happy that Stephanie came back from her leave of absence. I wouldn't sweat it too much if maybe in the near future she did want to go ahead and maybe entertain the idea of taking another step away for a little bit once the kind of the smoke is settled and so forth. Nick would do fine running the day to day at the office, and I think now is an opportunity maybe for Triple H to hopefully bring his influence back from a creative perspective. I'm kind of half and half with Bruce Pritchard. I think he's had some hits. He's had just as many misses too. And maybe if he could step away a little bit, maybe let the writers do their job, and we start to get a lot less filtering. Who knows if the TV rating or anything really has anything to do with it? But maybe not having such a high level of filtering from both Bruce and then Vince ultimately changing things. And we've all heard the scripts getting ripped up last minute. So that stuff is kind of coming to an end. It could be bumpy for a little bit, but I think we're all going to come out of this better for as both fans and if you are a shareholder, just keep holding in my opinion. And we're going to turn this into a financial talk, but that's my opinion on Vince. I'll be at Raw in Cleveland in a couple weeks. I will have a thank you Vince sign. I am in the front row on the lower level, so hopefully you guys will be able to see it. And I just had I have one question and I have one comment. If you had anything before I continue rambling, though.
No, go ahead.
All right, so as far as this show tonight, we've seen JJ, Double J now come in, and he's going to be the guest referee. Everyone's like, what is he going to do here? I don't know. I could see him being a factor in this supposed looming split between the Street Profits. Somehow he plays an influence in turning either Angelo Dawkins or Montez Ford heel, and I'm not sure if maybe that means he comes out as a valet or a manager of sorts with them for a short period of time, but could you potentially see a scenario like that where maybe he's helping turn one of them heel? And that I don't really know how we get from where we are now to that point, but that's the only kind of theory I have on that situation. And then my comment is on how that Maximum Male Models, which was already on thin ice, absolutely sinks without Max Dupree and his charisma that really is the glue that holds that whole thing together. Whoever his sister or whoever that was, I think it was a gal from NXT UK, she's pretty, but she really bombed that promo, in my opinion. And I really, really, we really saw how bad that kind of that whole situation is without Max Dupree out there. So that's all I got for you guys.
Mike,
I'll drop you a line on the email for the on-site correspondence. But thanks again for taking my call. What a historic night. What an honor.
Thank you, Dom. Appreciate you kicking off the show. Let me know. Drop me an email. Mike, if not the top story of the show, but we go in no particular order here once we get rolling with calls, and it is worth bringing up. Maxine Dupree stands in front of the Maximum Male Models. No, Max Dupree reports all day he wasn't at SmackDown. Could be any number of things, but I haven't heard. Have you heard? Do you have anything to report on why he wasn't there tonight?
No, I had seen beforehand that he wasn't backstage or wasn't expected to be on the show, which I thought was a little bit curious because, you know, he had built up that his sister was going to be on the show this week, so I would have thought that he would have been involved in it in some way. You know, and I do agree, I agree that he's really the person that pushes this gimmick forward and makes it anything more than, you know, a flop. I understand it's a stupid gimmick, but I do get enjoyment out of it so far, and I find it funny, which you could say there's a lot of bad segments or bad gimmicks that just aren't entertaining and you don't want anything to do with them. But because of him, I've actually enjoyed these Maximum Male Model segments. I think that he's so committed to the character and he's so good at really anything that he does. He did it in Impact, he did it in NXT, and is doing it here. So I think, yeah, he's the person that makes this thing go. I don't mind Sophia Cromwell, now Maxine Dupree, being involved in this. I think that what her personality, her look, I think it fits in well with what this is. I think it fits in better than what she was doing with Von Wagner and Robert Stone in NXT. But I think you have to have Max Dupree involved in this and running things and, you know, calling the shots for it to have any level of success moving forward.
How about anything else that Don brought up?
You know, I think he made a lot of good points on the Vince McMahon front. You know, I think that the main issue a lot of people have with him is the creative side. I think that nobody really questions him too much as a businessman. It's how could you really? Because WWE's been more successful from a business perspective in recent years than they ever have, which is saying a lot considering some of the huge high points in the company's history in previous years during the golden era, during the Attitude Era. So I think you can't really question that. And I do think that, you know, especially Nick Khan, by all accounts, very impressive in how he, you know, can run a business and can, you know, speak to people in high places and convince them. I feel like he's probably a really good fit to take over a lot of that type of stuff that Vince was doing. And from a creative perspective, you know, we'll see. I think Vince still has had some value because he's been there. He's seen it all. He's done it all. You know, I think he has a unique perspective that not a lot of people have. But there's no question that there's a lot of stuff that has fallen flat. There's a lot of stuff that's been repetitive. That's with any booker, really. But, you know, it's been the case with him for a while now, I feel like. So to get some fresh voices and to get some fresh opinions and ideas in there, I don't think is a bad thing. And as we talked about, I think it's going to be a little while before we see those fresh ideas really start to blossom and to get away from what we were doing previously. But I think, like, you have a guy like Triple H who ran the show in NXT and has a lot of experience being in that same position that Vince is in, except on a slightly lower level in NXT. If you can get him involved, I think that'll be good for the product. So I do think that there's a lot of positives that can come from it. I think there's some potential negatives as well, but I think that WWE's empowered you know, enough people in the right places that they're going to be able to move forward and still be a hugely successful company, even with Vince out of the picture.
All right, let's keep rolling through calls. You're invited to get in line on the phone lines, 347-215-8558. When you call, push 1. That's 347-215-8558. Love to hear your thoughts on Vince McMahon and SmackDown and the departure and arrival of Brock Lesnar. The return of the beast is back, as Cole said, not really putting in context he had left earlier today. So we'll try to figure that out, too, as the show goes on. But next, we've got Ashley in Virginia, who is ready to join the show. Ashley, your thoughts on SmackDown of Vince McMahon?
Hi, thank you so much for bringing me back on, especially on a night like tonight. Gosh, it's one of those things where it's like it's really hard to be brief about because it's like you could talk for hours about it. For me, long story short, it's kind of perplexing. And the main reason I wanted to chime in and I hit one tonight is because of actually what you mentioned. If the question on if I was present like tonight or in the shows coming up, would I be chanting "Thank you, Vince"? And honestly, I don't know. And it's very perplexing for me it's almost one of those things where you feel like you need a therapy session, right? So long story short, like, for me, I, as a fan growing up, I didn't even know, like, wrestling outside of WWF, WWE existed. It didn't have internet, so, like, even the magazines that I got was just strictly from WWE. Once I, of course, explored other wrestling, things definitely changed, but it's just one of those things where I grew up on WWE, Vince McMahon. He was, especially, like, in the early 2000s, he was just always on TV, right? So I literally, like, kind of grew up with him. So kind of going from that into being, obviously, an adult now and knowing the allegations that have he's – or just the allegations in general, rather, it's just weird. It's a weird feeling. So I don't really know. Like, I don't know how to feel as a fan. So I'm just kind of – still kind of taking everything in as we kind of get more and more information as the days go by. But yeah, in that regard, it's a really odd feeling. I don't really know how to feel. So yeah, but just kind of get that out of the way. But and I kind of wanted to pick your brain about Stephanie being co-CEO and not just taking over the company completely. What do you think that means going forward? Do you think it'll always remain kind of that co-title? I know it's still very, very early on, but and what it maybe this is too specific of a question you don't really have to answer, but your feelings on Nick Khan and maybe just as a businessman, because he's kind of got mixed reviews. Like, he's kind of known for, like, doing a lot of talent cuts and stuff. So do you think he's really, like, that, like, harsh and just, like, that cutthroat, or do you think there will be, like, a good balance, or how do you think that will be going forward?
Yeah, it's interesting. I'm not on the side of everybody who ever got hired by WWE should keep their jobs forever and how dare WWE cut them. And when I look at the people that were cut and talk to people about why they were cut, I'm rarely taken aback at bad judgment or cruelty and just think it's a business decision. And for anyone to get hired, someone's got to be released. And that's been the ebb and flow for decades. And it just so happens to be more public now, because people used to get cut from wrestling companies all the time, and we'd find out because they wouldn't be on TV for weeks, or they wouldn't be working house shows, and then people like me, pre-internet, would be asking around, and then would report in our newsletter, this person is no longer with the company, and it just happened differently. Now there's, you know, they could do one every 2 weeks, or they can do 8 or 12 every couple months, but it's been happening forever, and it'll continue to happen. I think with Nick, where some of the pushback was, is that it led to a thinner on-air product, that it came at the same time that there was so much repetition of with the matches on TV. And I think some of the, you know, criticism came for the timing, you know, during the pandemic. And also the sense of, well, I like that wrestler, and instead you're pushing this wrestler. What's up with that? And I think there's definitely something to that. And Nick Khan's not a wrestling guy. It's not that he's unfamiliar with wrestling, but it's not like he's Triple H or Bruce Pritchard, for that matter, and people who just, you know, their whole lives professionally are about pro wrestling in various roles. So he came in mostly as a business guy looking to maximize revenue and minimize expense. And that's his DNA. That is what he was hired to do. And frankly, he's pretty good at it. You know, he's a deal maker, and he's been at the forefront and the leader of WWE's most prominent increase in revenue. However, correlation or causation, you know, it's hard to tell, because this is a time when live weekly programming that networks can rely on, cable and broadcast, are coveting anything that can bring in the type of demographics 52 weeks out of the year, year after year, that pro wrestling does. So somebody fresh out of college who had no experience might have also overseen big deals being offered. Obviously, Nick probably had the enough savviness to negotiate a better deal than some kid out of college, but there are big deals waiting for WWE and frankly, AEW, for anybody just putting themselves out there with the audiences that they already had. So Nick, I hear mostly good things about Nick as a person in terms of people who are around him. And I'm hearing increasingly good things about Stephanie and how wrestlers feel about her. I know the women's division, and I hate speaking for whole division, but, you know, from what I hear, there's optimism and excitement about Stephanie being in charge. There's a fear, not just among women, but among wrestlers, about being at all critical or second-guessing a Vince McMahon idea, and then Vince McMahon hears about it, and then he thinks you're trouble, and the next thing you know, you're wondering, am I not getting pushed because of that? There's hope that doesn't happen. And I think there's hope that, you know, the women's division in particular won't be pushed for the reasons that Vince McMahon pushed women in the past. I thought one of the biggest stories that wasn't getting headlines, Mike, in recent weeks was Vince McMahon's still in charge of the creative fortunes of women? With these allegations, these credible allegations, these payouts, he stepped away as he stepped back as CEO, but he's still deciding what women wear, who beats whom, who gets pushed, what the announcers say about them, what words they say to each other. This man is still in charge of that? How is that okay with these allegations? Why is he still in charge of creative for everybody, but especially the women with the allegations and what came along with them? So I have some more to say about what Ashley said, but I want to throw to you for thoughts on anything I brought up and also Ashley's question.
Sure. You know, kind of on the subject of Nick Khan, and, you know, I don't have a lot of inside information on how people within the company kind of view him, but I do know how people view him on, you know, as a whole, especially him coming from a sports background, previously, you know, running an agency, and obviously WWE specifically targeting him to have this role as WWE president, and that is that he is the consummate businessman, that he knows how to get a deal done. He knows how to, you know, generate revenue. He knows how to, you know, land contracts. In that respect, I think he's the perfect replacement for Vince from a business perspective. And, you know, I know that every decision that's made in WWE is technically a wrestling decision because it's a wrestling company. But I think that, you know, Nick Khan's role is going to be more bigger picture stuff. I think that's going to be more, you know, television contracts and sponsorships and all that type of stuff that he's more well-versed in. And then maybe Stephanie's going to be a little more, you know, in the weeds in terms of wrestling-related stuff because obviously she's been in this business for almost her entire life. She's seen it all firsthand. I think that it's a good, you know, a good mix to have as the co-CEO. And then obviously Stephanie has that added title of chairwoman. So essentially she has the same titles that Vince had, but with the caveat that there's also another CEO in Nick Khan. So I think they can kind of split the duties in that respect and have success in that way. And I've heard the same things. Like, it seems like as far as Stephanie is concerned, there's always a lot of positivity, even what wrestlers put out there just on social media and how, you know, they voice their support for her. I think that, you know, she's kind of almost like a sentimental figure that people, you know, in the business, especially in WWE, they respect and they want to work for her, it almost seems like. So I think that it's good to have somebody like that, and then it's good to have somebody like Nick Khan, who's maybe viewed a little bit more as a cutthroat businessman. But I also think that, you know, it's important to consider. I think that obviously Nick Khan kind of made these suggestions for making cuts and maybe who they should cut. But at the end of the day, when these cuts were made, Vince McMahon was the person that gave the okay and went ahead with it. So whether Vince is in power or Vince is not in power, I don't think that really changes how Nick Khan is going to operate, because he was able to do the things that he wanted to do when Vince was in power. So he'll be able to do the things that he wants to do when Vince isn't in power. Vince empowered him to make these types of decisions, and I think that's why he's in the role that he is.
The question that, Ashley, you brought up about co-CEOs, I think this might last a while. Harvard Business Review did an article on this pretty recently. I think it was just days ago, and talked about the value of having co-CEOs. And it's fewer than 10% of companies have co-CEOs. It might even be quite a bit less than that, but it's not unheard of. And the idea is a company is stronger when people with very diverse backgrounds bring different things to the table, and they can be in two places at once. They can each have separate roles. They can be at separate meetings. They can play good cop, bad cop on negotiations. If they have chemistry, one can play to her strengths in the case of Stephanie, and Nick can play to his strengths. And so it's possible that this works, but there's also was pushback in that article about, you know, that power sharing eventually breaks down, and it just is really difficult because when push comes to shove, who's going to have the final say? And if maybe Stephanie, because of the McMahon name and the chairwoman status, Nick will defer to her, but maybe Nick goes, wait a second, I've been here, I've made these deals, you stepped away for whatever reasons, and Nick knows more than I do about those reasons, I'm sure. But he might be like, I'm the guy who's been in the trenches here building this business, and on business decisions, I think I should have that power. So I that's the part I just don't know the dynamic between those two. Believe me, I've been asking, you know, going on 7 hours now, you know, I've been asking people about it. So I'm not sure how long that lasts, and I don't think I mean, maybe some people in the company who know them will make predictions to me when I ask, but so far I haven't gotten any kind of feedback about whether this feels like it's more a Band-Aid because McMahon name wants to be there, but Stephanie doesn't really want the title long-term, or if Stephanie's going to aim to oust Nick Khan. It's just a matter of time. Like, I haven't heard any scuttlebutt like that. One other thing that you brought up, Ashley, that I don't want to comment on, is the fans chanting for Vince. And whenever this happens, that somebody is famous and admired, but they're accused, especially of sexual impropriety, how do the women who were the victims of that feel when they watch a crowd cheering for that person and bow? You know, I was at Target Center for Vince's second to last on-camera appearance for WWE in front of fans last month. And was it last month? Yeah, it was last month. And I was walking in the building and fans are, you know, popping for Vince McMahon coming out on the day that news came out. And I was like, well, they maybe haven't heard of it yet. You know, it takes sometimes not everybody's glued to the news. Their phone alerts aren't popping up. But by this time, most people have to have heard. But maybe the people chanting for Vince were the people who aren't following the news, and they didn't know. Or maybe there are people who compartmentalize. I know there's music that comes up, and I'm like, I like this song, but I don't like the artist. Should I enjoy the song? And I tend to still enjoy the song. So there's part of that, but I'm not sure that I would chant that that artist's name if I was at a concert for them. Well, why am I at a concert for them then? I don't know. I ran a Twitter poll over 150 votes in already, and I just put this up a few minutes ago. Would you have chanted thank you, Vince, if you were at SmackDown tonight? 45% yes, 48% no, 7% maybe. So very split. That probably was the case in the building tonight too. Maybe a little heavier towards chanting his name because they bought tickets to a WWE show. So it might lean a little more pro WWE than my Twitter follower audience or PW Torch Twitter audience. But, you know, different people would have their reasons. Ashley, I want to throw back to you either for reaction to what Mike and I said or any follow-up or anything we didn't cover that you brought up.
No, you guys made a ton of good points, so thank you for that. And like you said, I really am intrigued by the co-CEO title. I'm very happy for Stephanie. I think I was just more so surprised than anything else. I mean, obviously we all were, but just with the co-titling, I guess I just wasn't expecting that. But I'm definitely intrigued to see how it plays out. And just to see their dynamics, like you mentioned, how they play off of each other and kind of run the company going forward. But I'll just kind of leave on these last two things and let you guys carry on. And thank you again for taking my call. I did want to mention really quick that I really enjoyed the Pat McAfee and Baron Corbin segment. That did feel a little different to me, and I don't know if that had anything to do with Vince not being there or if it's just maybe Pat McAfee has a little bit more say-so in, like, the direction of things. But just, like, the attack out of nowhere from Corbin kind of again this week, but the fact that Pat McAfee chased him backstage and they continued on with the shot and they didn't just leave it, like the camera just staring to the stage or just cut to the next scene or anything, that actually showed the fight backstage and getting into it. Pat came back to the ring. He still, you know, made his comments about Corbin and, you know, like the names that he calls him, but it was still kind of a real feeling and emotional. And personally, I like the way how it played out. And then the last question I have for you guys, and then, like I said, I'll let you guys go and thank you again. But with Brock, of course, obviously either, I don't know if it was true that he left and then came back or if he was there the entire night, whatever. He was obviously still there. Do you think, with Brock being here, this is just until SummerSlam, then he's gone for good with Vince being gone? And with Vince leaving, do you think any talent would be more likely to come back, like a Sasha Banks or anyone for that matter? But again, thank you guys so much for taking my call. Hope you have a good night.
Thank you, Ashley. Appreciate it. Great topics. I actually was just texting a WWE wrestler earlier tonight about, you know, whether this increases the chances of Sasha coming back and Naomi coming back. And my take, Mike, is yes. If Sasha and Naomi are looking to save face, even if they get no concessions specifically about their situation, because I mean, there's wrestlers who like them but strongly disagree with their decision to walk out because they were booked for two title matches, but they didn't like the circumstances of the buildup and the planned outcomes, so they walked out because as tag champs they were supposed to be protected. I know there's a lot of baggage coming into that moment, a lot built up to it, but not everybody on that roster sympathetic to them for walking out. There's certainly diverse opinions, but they'd be welcomed back, and they could come back and save face with the idea being, Vince isn't around, so let's see if things are better, without necessarily getting an apology or some sort of course correction from Vince because Vince isn't around to do it. So my thinking is this dramatically increases the chance of Sasha and Naomi coming back. Mike, what's your thought on that?
Yeah, I definitely agree. And it's a thought that I had almost immediately after all this kind of happened today. You know, without having any real inside knowledge about the situation, what we do know is that, you know, Vince is obviously the one who was calling the shots on the day that Sasha and Naomi walked out. And John Laurinaitis was specifically mentioned in the statement that WWE released, that they walked into his office and laid down the tag team titles and said they didn't want to do it and they walked out. Well, those two people, Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis, are essentially gone from the company at this point. And what we know now is that Triple H has essentially stepped into John Laurinaitis' role. He's VP of talent relations. We know without a doubt the great relationship that Sasha Banks has with Triple H and the love and respect that seems to be there between them based on their time together in NXT. And, you know, we know that most female wrestlers seem to really look up to and respect Stephanie McMahon in WWE. And the fact that Triple H and Stephanie McMahon are now holding these two high-ranking positions alone makes me think that there's a much bigger chance that they would want to come back. You know, Vince McMahon is gone. John Laurinaitis is gone. It's an entirely new power structure. And I just feel like, you know, if they had any interest in coming back, as long as, you know, Vince McMahon and John Laurinaitis were out of the picture, then I think that this would be the opportunity. Maybe it got so bad to a point where they're like, I just want nothing to do with this company at all. I don't know that, but that's a possibility. But if they had any little feeling in their heart that maybe I would like to try to make this work, I think this is the opportunity to do it because you have people in power now who you have, at least to my knowledge, a much better relationship with.
Did you notice anything different with the Max P. Corbin segment that Ashley brought up?
You know, my main focus during that segment was when they fought backstage, trying to catch a little glimpse at Gorilla to see who was sitting over there.
Yes.
Yep. To be honest with you, I was hoping that they would
I was too. I hadn't heard it was Bruce Pritchard yet, and that's when I asked and got that answer from someone.
Right. It was my assumption that it was going to be him there, but I just wanted to kind of see it. Kind of thought they were going to do it just as a little Easter egg to people who were
me too.
In the yep. know. But they didn't do
the
it.
Fact
but...
that they did, and the fact that they didn't show Bruce Pritchard makes me think he's not getting some sort of official endorsement from Stephanie and Nick. You know, like, because if they wanted to send a message, hey, everybody, we're in good hands. Look, here's Bruce Pritchard. He's been around, you know, since the 80s. He's worn so many hats, and we're fine. Like, they could have shown him, and they didn't. I'm not saying read into the fact that they didn't, but had they shown him, I would have read into it.
Right, and it wasn't part of the announcement that he was taking over as creative, just like it was never officially announced by the company that he was taking over talent relations on an interim basis. But there was reports out there that he had done that as well. So, yeah, I would agree with that. I think maybe he's going to be more of a utility player moving forward and doing different kinds of things. But, yeah, that was really my main focus during that segment. You know, it was certainly different from anything else on the show, you know, battling backstage and then you go to commercial and then Pat McAfee comes out and cuts his promo. But my main takeaway was it was one of the more entertaining things on the show. I think by and large, it wasn't a great episode of SmackDown, save for like a few little things and for the big surprise of Brock coming out at the end. But until that, I think, you know, that situation was the thing that I enjoyed most on the show. I think Pat McAfee is just such a superstar. You know, I had high hopes for him when they put him in the role as SmackDown announcer, and he's just gone above and beyond anything that I expected out of him. And, you know, he's cuts a better promo than most people in the business. And he can go in the ring. Obviously he's not like a technical master, but he can go in the ring and have an entertaining match. So, you know, that's one of the matches I'm most looking forward to at SummerSlam, and that's one of the best segments on the show this week. And generally, if Pat McAfee's involved in it, it's going to be one of the best things on the show.
When McAfee was finished with his promo, I was just like, man, if more wrestlers were allowed to just talk like that, Ron SmackDown would be so much more compelling. You know, if I've been harping on Bianca Belair and her tight scripting and the mannerisms and the catchphrases and the EST stuff, and it's just sort of a crutch and she leans on it too hard, and that's per instructions to her, I assume, not her choice. I'd love to see her have that kind of freedom, because when she's interviewed off WWE TV, there's this amazing natural charisma that she has that very few have. And it just doesn't come across on TV because it's so she's so narrowly cast in a gimmick that usually the type of scripting and presentation that's given to people who kind of need it sometimes because on their own, they're not great. McAfee is that living, breathing example of if someone's good at something, just let them be good at it. And I'm with you. By the way, I looked up that Harvard Business Review article, and I wanted to see how many co-CEOs there were. Fewer than 100 out of 2,200 companies that were at one time listed on the S&P 1200 were led by co-CEOs, but that's still about 4%. So it's not unheard of. And the headline was, is it time to consider co-CEOs? The model is more viable than you might think. And it had some pros in the article and also some cons. So not K-H-A-N-S, C-O-N-S. But maybe there's some cons in there.
Some, at least one.
Tony and Nick. Yeah, Tony Khan and his tweet. Come on, Tony. Don't be a troll. All right.
Yeah.
Let's it might be time, since you're the most senior CEO, to
– which isn't even true, but sure.
Yeah, who's the longer running?
It's got to be – I had read Jason Brown in Impact has been in his role since 2016.
That's what I was thinking. I was wondering if
has Billy Corgan been in his role in NWA longer than AEW's been in existence? That's a possibility.
Does he call himself a CEO?
Maybe not. Maybe that's the distinction. But I'm fairly certain Jason Brown is the CEO of Impact Wrestling. So,
well, there have been things like, you know, in AEW press releases were like, you know, the first competitor, the first national cable competitor to WWE, and it's like, you know what? No, since WWE went out of business.
Right.
Impact went head-to-head on Monday nights, and they did, you know, pretty well for, you know, a couple weeks here or there before they blew it. But anyway, moving on, our number is 347-215-8558. Push 1 if you'd like to be on the show. Got a lot of people calling in, and we appreciate that, and you're welcome to join them. We'll try to get to everybody. We are here every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday night covering Raw, Dynamite, and SmackDown. We're live after those shows go off the air, about 5 minutes or so. You can stream the show from on a website, or you can call in and listen. And the way to find the link to the live stream is to go to wadekellerpostshow.com and click on the live stream link. You can also get the direct link to that night's show in my TV reports at pwtorch.com. Just click on the Raw, Dynamite, or SmackDown report that I'm doing, and at the top and bottom there will be a link to the show, along with a phone number and email address if you're looking for those too. And you can also find it on our Twitter account, at PWTorch. Around the time the show ends, either a couple minutes before or right afterwards, I put up a direct link to the stream. Many ways to join us and listen live. Of course, most of you download the show afterwards because it's more convenient for your schedule to listen on demand, and we thank you too. But if you do listen live, you're always invited to participate and call in. All right, so moving on. We'll go to area code 905 next. 905, thanks for calling. Go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hi, Wade.
Go ahead, 905. Yes.
Hey, how are you? I was live in the building tonight.
Oh, cool. So, what's your name and what's your hometown? Let's get that out of the way.
My name's Daryl. I'm from Toronto, but we drove down road trip this weekend to go to Fenway Park.
Oh, fun.
And SmackDown just happened to be in town. So,
well,
we
what
got
a night
there
too.
Just as the show was starting. Yeah, I actually, because I was driving, because I drove 11 hours, I didn't read anything on Twitter, so I had no idea that Vince McMahon retired.
So Stephanie stood in that ring live on television and announced that, and you were among the people who had not heard yet.
Yeah, she didn't even get an entrance. I think they snuck her in through the crowd, like that side entrance by the announce table and the ring bell.
Wow. What was the reaction in the building? Like, did you sense there was a gasp, like people didn't know, or did you feel like, am I the last to know when she made that announcement?
There was a lot of people that had no idea.
Yeah. Now,
the thank you, Vince, chant wasn't that loud either time.
Interesting. Okay. Yeah. Because did you partake in that? And if so, yeah, why or why not?
No, not at all. You know, I'm 40. I go to a lot of wrestling, but I'm not vocal at all at the shows. I just like to watch.
That makes sense. Tell us about the mood in the building after Stephanie's announcement. Did everyone just kind of go back to normal? You've been to a lot of shows was it just like a normal show from then on out?
Yeah, basically, because the Street Profits, their music hit, and Stephanie exited through the main entrance, and they came in through the crowd, and majority of the crowd was looking at the stage expecting the Street Profits, but when they came through the crowd, it just kind of everybody forgot about Stephanie.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, it would be easy to just move on. Not that it was like, it didn't seem like a blockbuster show on TV, but I assume when Brock Lesnar came out, kind of the intensity in the building picked up. Actually, talk about that moment and talk about the ebb and flow of the energy in the building for the rest of the show. Did it seem like a good live event experience for you, and was the crowd into it? And then how did the Brock Lesnar reaction amplify or change that?
So the rest of the show, it's SmackDown. They have no star power, right, outside of, Drew McIntyre, who's a former champion, and Sheamus. But honestly, it was Pat McAfee at the beginning of the show before it started that got the big reaction. And then his segment, and then when he came back out, he was watching the screen as he came back down the ramp and interacting with the crowd, and then his segment. Because I think a lot of people just assumed Brock wasn't coming, because the ones that were around me had read online that he had left when Vince left. So I think, at that point, outside of McAfee and Drew, there wasn't many big names. They didn't announce anybody from Raw coming for later in the show. Like the McIntyre-Sheamus street fight was the dark match after it went off the air. And Ronda Rousey coming out later on. Outside of them, it's, the Usos, the Street Profits, you saw twice. Same with Austin Theory, Madcap. Right.
Yeah.
So yeah, well, Brock coming out at the very end was a surprise to me. I read wrestling Twitter all day, except, today I was driving, so I was completely out of the loop. So Brock coming out at the end, my son was on my phone because he had lost interest. So I actually grabbed my wife's phone and I took pictures and videos because, that was the big surprise moment for me, was seeing Brock. And then my son got up because he got excited because, there's an actual star in the building. But, yeah, that was, like I said, they go right from there into the dark match, basically just the transition. And then the show's over. Drew says thank you and says goodbye.
Daryl, let me give Mike a chance to ask you a question about your experience tonight in the arena.
Yeah, so, sure. I mean, you mentioned that you didn't know, and you felt like a lot of people didn't know that Vince had announced his retirement, which is interesting because we think of people as all being very plugged in these days. But, there's a big difference between the wrestling fans and the internet at sometimes and the fans that go to these actual events. But, with Brock, I know you said that you didn't really know about it until you got to the arena and people were talking about it. Did you get the sense that everybody pretty much had heard that news of Brock walking out before SmackDown and that they didn't expect him to be there? Did you feel like people just thought, this is just what's supposed to happen and Brock shows up and it's business as usual? Like, what was the sense that you kind of got there?
No, I think when you advertise Brock Lesnar, you just assume he's in the first segment so he can go home first. And then, when it started with Stephanie saying, thank you to her dad, and then right into the Street Profits, they didn't even tip the crowd off like normal, where they have the cameraman in the aisle way pointing at the entrance where you're expecting someone to run in at the very end. And with the Usos and Street Profits having their tag match on Sunday, they ended the show last week with a brawl, so there was no reason to think they wouldn't do it again.
Daryl, pretty deep in the show. We got a lot of people on hold. So I just want to kind of throw back to you for any final comments you want to share about your experience tonight. Anything else off air that you want to share, something during a commercial break or before, after the show, or anything else before we move on?
Not really. Like the dark match was Ricochet and Drew Gulak against Los Lotharios. And, Ricochet won with the Shooting Star Press. McIntyre and Sheamus had a 7-minute street fight. And that's for the kids, right? They're just chanting for tables and weapons. And, the good guy gives them what they want. They go home happy. He gave a speech, said if anybody sees him in Boston tonight, to buy him a beer. You know, stuff like that. So Drew does come off as a star. He just has that silly sword that isn't going to be appealing to anybody over the age of 12. You know, but it was a shame that he was the champion during the, you know, he was the champion when he was hot, and then they got into the COVID era, and there was no fans, and he's never recovered. He never got a second chance with the belt, and the first chance he had to win it, he lost at WrestleMania to Lashley. So, you know, Drew never really got a chance to succeed.
I'm with you on that, Daryl. Did they explain why Sheamus and Drew were fighting when they said they were going to actually fight next week? Was there kind of an in-house storyline to explain it, or did they just do the match?
Yeah, Sheamus came out with a microphone. Like, he was the first guy. He basically passed Brock in the Gorilla and came out to his music and then had the microphone and ran down the town and said he wanted to fight Drew because Drew cut his shillelagh in half. You know, and it's one-on-one, and then Butch comes out, interferes, and then Ridge Holland comes out and, you know, goes through the table so Sheamus doesn't have to. And then Claymore, and it's over. So, you know, they kept the crowd invested, right? And especially the ones that stay late. It's the family and the kids that are there to see the, you know, the name that's been advertised, right?
How full was the building?
There was tickets available on Ticketmaster and StubHub. I bought mine 25 minutes before the show started for less than half of what, of the actual price. And I would probably still say it was about 80% full. They were loud. They were there to have a good time. They weren't sitting on their hands. You know, the Sheamus and the Nakamura Kaiser match didn't draw much, and same with Raquel and her match with Sonya. You know, Ronda came out and got a pretty good reaction, but I think that was a surprise too. But yeah, for the most part, it was a good show. I think now you go to WWE just because of the name. You don't go to see individual people. You know, it's like the circus. You know what acts you're getting, and you clap when you clap, and you cheer for the good guys, and it's for the kids, really.
Yeah.
You know, and that's
all right. Well,
I have a question for you, Wade, actually, before you let me go. I just have one quick question. I've always wondered this when I go to these live events. I've been to 120 events in my life. Why do they not sell merchandise for kids? Like shirts that fit them. Why is everything marketed to adults? But there's not a single shirt under a size medium for children in that building. It's a men's medium. It's not even for children.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, they certainly sell fiend masks meant for kids. You know, like there's
and the dolls,
little items. Yeah, and the dolls, but they don't have the really small sizes for kids. That's a good question, Mike. Do you have any idea about that? Do you agree?
I don't really have an answer for that, but, you know, thinking back, like, when I was a kid and I would go to the shows, like, I remember I'd have to get a freaking huge shirt that didn't fit me because they certainly had less size options back then because, you know, if you weren't getting stuff at the shows, you were getting them out of a catalog. It wasn't until a little bit later that they had, you know, WWE shop online and all that type of stuff. So the options were really limited then. But, yeah, you know, I've been to shows recently and, you know, my girlfriend has a daughter and, you know, if you want to buy her a shirt, like, the options aren't really there. You have to go online and try to find a kid size. So I do find that kind of strange, but it's kind of always been that way. And I'm not really too sure why, especially since your core audience that you're trying to market to is generally children.
Yeah. Especially on the shows and the live events and stuff. Yeah. There's just nothing for children, but anyway, wait, thank you. You're deep in the show. You got to go. I understand. Thank you so much for taking my call.
Yes. I'm very glad you called in. It was very interesting to get that detail.
I've been listening for probably 7-8 years, and I've never hit one. And tonight, just because I did the road trip, I thought it would be fun to call in.
Well, don't be a stranger. Feel free to push one again next time you're watching live.
I appreciate it. Well, you have a great night. Thanks, guys.
Yep, you bet. Mike, I wonder how many people are going to give a chance to WWE programming post-Vince because they felt like the programming left them behind. It wasn't for them. They blamed Vince. Are they going to just tune in expecting and anticipating change, or do you think there's going to have to be a buzz or even some very distinct changes to bring some people back?
you know, my guess is that even just tonight, there's probably going to be a bump in viewership compared to what we usually see. I think we kind of saw that even like when it was announced, when the allegations came out, and then it was announced that Vince was going to be on SmackDown, just to kind of see what he was going to say. And I think that we might get a similar thing like happening with tonight's show, where it's people, you know, I want to see what's different, what's the same, how they're going to address this, that type of thing. And I think that people that tuned in tonight probably thought, well, this seems like the same show that I always see. So maybe a lot of them aren't going to stick around, and I think, you know, are going to wait until they hear, you know, definitive opinions about things changing and things having a different look and a different feel. But yeah, I think that, you know, I think people are going to kind of be filtering in a little bit more, you know, because I think that there are a lot of people that tuned out of WWE because primarily they felt like Vince McMahon was just repetitive and doing the same things and, quote unquote, lost touch with what it took to be head of creative and to book the shows. And I think that, you know, especially in terms of online internet fans, there's a lot of people that school of thought's very prevalent. So I think that we probably got some of those people tuning in today. I think that we might get some checking in here and there, but I think that that really probably won't be felt until, as we kind of talked about, until there actually feels like there's a definitive shift in the way that the shows are written and run, which could take a while.
We did have a question about Brock earlier. Daryl brought him up too. We can, I'm sure some of the callers on hold will bring him up too, but we should just note there are reports in the afternoon that Brock Lesnar walked out on the show or walked out in the afternoon, when the news about Vince McMahon broke. That turned into an assumption that he was walking out in protest of Vince McMahon retiring and might not be on SummerSlam. And then WWE pulled him from their they issued a lineup 45 minutes, and Jason Powell reported on this on ProWrestling.net. They issued an email lineup that included Lesnar 45 minutes before he published his initial story, but then he wasn't any longer on the WWE.com main page, and he had been earlier. So WWE at one point seemed to be expecting him not to be there. Now, there's a chance they said, hey, there's this buzz. Brock just had to go buy – he saw there was a sale on vests or something, and he's like going to run across the street, and people are like, oh, my God, he walked out, and they blew it out of proportion.
I tweeted he went to lunch. He went to Jimmy John's. That's clearly
exactly
what happened.
Jared Lawler
free,
would always
he gets free sandwiches, part of his sponsorship.
Jerry Lawler would always go to malls, like, you know, he'd skip the production meeting and, oh, Jerry Lawler walked out of the building. Well, no, he just, you know, went to the mall. I don't know. Everybody I talked to was assuming it was a blow up over Vince because he was so tight with Vince. It's weird to think he would do that. But there wasn't any kind of pushback officially. Oh no, Brock actually just did this. So it seems like, based on reporting, unless it just sort of was a story that engulfed itself and got blown out of proportion, there was an issue earlier in the day. There were even some entities reporting Goldberg had been contacted already to be a replacement for Brock, which seemed a little hasty for WWE to do that, you know, within hours of SmackDown, where they're still trying to get Brock back. But that report at least was circulating. But then he showed up at the end of the show. But they spent an hour 50 minutes not talking about Brock, other than Theory mentioning, I don't care if it's Rome, I don't care if it's the Tribal Chief or the Beast, I'll cash in.
That had to be by design, I would think, because they knew what people had heard.
Well, that's the thing. So were they working hard for an hour and a half to get Brock, talk sense into Brock? Paul Heyman, go talk to Brock, get him in the building. Or why is, you know, what's Brock worried about? Let's make sure he doesn't have, you know, knows he doesn't have anything to worry about. Or Stephanie or Nick Khan called him, or maybe he got threatened by lawyers. I don't know. Or, like you said, or you're, you know, mentioning, maybe they decide to play into it. But the SummerSlam commercial didn't show Brock. You know, that music video about Nashville and the lights and all that. I don't think Brock was in that. But Becky was in it. Roman was in it at the end. You know, a bunch of everybody else seemed to be in it. So who knows? We can, you know, deconstruct this. I think we'll get, within a matter of hours or days, a little bit more solid word on this. But it turned into another drama during the afternoon and into the evening. But then his music hit, and he came out. He's smiling, and he beats up Theory. And it seems like all is well with the SummerSlam main event. If he did walk out and it took some cajoling to get him back, you know, without Vince McMahon in charge, if Brock is like, I don't want to work for Stephanie, I don't want to work for Nick Khan, whatever, I mean, this could be it for Brock, you know? You know, this emergency replacement it could end up just being sort of a one-off, and who knows if he comes back after that. So, Mike, your take on that, and then we will get right back to calls.
Yeah, you know, the reports just – they just didn't make sense to me. They didn't sit well with me. I was very skeptical of them when they came out because it – I don't know. It just didn't seem like something – the type of reaction he would have. We know that he has a great relationship with Vince. He's talked about it many times. He's essentially likened it to a father-son relationship and talked about the respect that he has for Vince. So we know, obviously, that he likes working for Vince and he respects Vince. So, you know, if this was just kind of, you know – placed in his lap today and he had no prior knowledge to it, I could see him maybe being taken aback, maybe being upset about it. We know that Brock kind of has a reputation for being hot-headed at times. So I could see maybe him having a reaction to it. But I also know that that Brock is a great businessman, obviously. I don't know that he would really do too much to put his money at risk. And we know that obviously he's working against Roman Reigns, who I assume he has respect for, working with Paul Heyman, who we know he's very close with and has respect for. I don't think he's as close to Stephanie and Triple H as he is Vince, but I don't get the sense that he has any kind of real issues with either of them, either. I feel like we get reports like this about Brock from time to time. I remember one from a few years ago where it was like he, you know, had this big blow up and he took off in his jet and he went home. But nothing ever comes of these reports when it comes to Brock. He shows up and he's there and he does what he's supposed to do and he makes his money and he moves on and then he does the next thing and he gets the next contract and he makes more money. Like, that's what Brock does. So to me, like, I never got the sense like, oh, you know, not going to show up for SummerSlam. I assume that he's going to do whatever he has to do to fulfill his obligations and to make his money, because I think that ultimately, like I said, Brock is a businessman and he's going to do what's in the best interest for him from a business perspective. And, you know, fulfilling his contractual obligations is probably what's in his best financial interest.
All right. Let's move on here to another call. We'll go to area code 561. All right, 561, I will try you again, but that noise was really loud. So after the next call, we'll try you and have us muted while we bring you on, and then hopefully you can be in a you're not mowing your lawn or whatever the heck was happening there. All right, Eric, code 347, you are up next. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from. 347, you're up. 347, going once. Going twice. We will go instead to a familiar name here, Steve in Baltimore. Steve, it's been a little while. Welcome. What'd you think of SmackDown tonight? Your thoughts on Vince too?
I thought it was like you guys said, pretty normal episode of SmackDown. It's probably the Brock came out at the end like everybody else. I definitely tuned in. I haven't been watching regularly lately because of what I heard. I literally heard it about 10 minutes before the show. It popped on my phone and I was one of the ones that called to tune in. My main question for you, somebody's covered him for over 30 years, a year from now, what do you think Vince is doing? Is he sitting on the beach in Florida or is he promoting something else outside of WWE?
It is the question a lot of people have been asking me and that I've been asking other people who know Vince. What's he going to do when he wakes up tomorrow and doesn't have a WWE-related phone call? Or business decision, or booking decision, or fire to put out. I don't know, unless he is, going to shadow book, or, he and Stephanie are going to still talk every day. Dad, don't worry, I'll call you and keep you up to date on everything. And Vince's like, all right. And Stephanie will sort of in her own way, still let Vince have an influence on things, and that's how he'll be engaged. He'll watch the show, and he'll get feedback. It'll be a whole different role. But even that's very different than showing up and being the guy who everyone is, waiting to meet with in person and all that. He's 77 years old. And there's some people who I've talked to today who have known him in the past who are worried for him, that they just don't know how he'll adjust. You talk about a year from now, I'm wondering about a day or a week from now. And I'm not saying like, oh, I'm more worried about Vince McMahon than I am the average person. Vince is very well equipped with his money. And as he noted in the press release, quote, he's still majority owner. It's not like he's selling. There's a lot about this story that still has to play out. And Vince's future as head of creative and CEO seems to be part of the past, but who owns WWE? Vince McMahon. You know, he's still got the majority power. So there's still a lot to kind of work out here. This is an unusual situation. And so maybe a year from now, he's still the majority owner, or maybe he's cashed out. Maybe he's had to sign off on selling WWE to some other company, and he you know, meddled and made things difficult for the deal to go through because he had so much say-so. I don't know. I haven't had a chance to process all that, and I'm curious to talk to people who know more than I do about that kind of transaction and the way the business is set up stock-wise, what kind of influence Vince will have going forward. And that's sort of a day two analysis for me, more than the instant reaction. But Vince McMahon has never taken vacations. I've been told he absolutely genuinely loves being a grandpa. And it's possible that he, in a few days, wakes up and says, I've never been happier. This is such a relief. And I want to go take my grandkids to the park or bring them over to the big backyard with a playground and you know, teach them a color with them and play games with them and play catch. And he's just happy. And he surprises himself and he decides to travel. I do not know. But I do know people who know him well are kind of concerned. One person just said that he thinks he'll kind of start to shut down and that he'll actually like get physically sick or not well. Because it's such a such a change for him. I'm trying to find the tweet from that person. Anyway, Mike, I want to throw to you. What do you think Vince is doing a year from now?
Yeah, you know, I think in some way, shape, or form, he's always going to have, even if it's unofficial, some level of involvement with WWE because, you know, it's his baby. It's his creation. It's, you know, what he's eat and slept and breathed for decades. And I don't think that's something that he could easily just shut off from. You know, you mentioned it. I think it's very telling that he said in his statement, you know, I'm still the majority stakeholder in WWE and I'm going to offer support in any way I can. So I could say maybe like a, you know, off the books type of consultary role where I could see him, you know, just speaking to people who are, you know, high ranking in the company, whether it's Stephanie or Triple H or Bruce Pritchard, and kind of giving his thoughts and his opinions and that type of thing. I think he'll always be willing and wanting to offer that type of thing. So I think he'll have some level of involvement. At the same time, I could see him maybe branching off and doing something different. He created his own you know, separate company, Alpha Entertainment, I think it was called, to, you know, recreate the XFL a couple of years ago. And obviously that didn't work out largely because of the COVID pandemic and having to stop the season in the middle of it. But I could see him maybe using that to do something else. I don't know what it would be. I don't know what his other interests might be. I don't think he really has too many other interests, but obviously he had enough interest in starting a football league. So I don't know, maybe he asks, hey, The Rock, can I get involved in your version of the XFL now? Or maybe he just branches off and tries to do something completely different. But I think he is the type of guy that always needs to be focused on something, always has to have a project of some kind in order to be happy. Like you said, he doesn't take vacations. He doesn't want to just relax. So I think he's going to find something else to do, even if it's not WWE, but I do think he's going to have some level of involvement with WWE still for as long as he lives.
Jake Barnett just messaged me from ProWrestling.net and said, Vince McMahon retired 28 years to the day that he was cleared in the steroid trial.
Saw that.
That is something else. Yeah, I mean, does Vince McMahon start? One person that I messaged, I think it was the next creative team member, said he might just start another wrestling company. You know, I don't know what kind of non-compete he does or doesn't have. Have you heard that, by the way, Mike? If he has any kind of non-compete?
I have not.
Yeah.
You know, I don't think he's going to be all elite, though, something tells me.
No. But, you know, what I mean, I could see Vince just thinking, you know, that he puts out this nice message, but he's going to go to war with his daughter and son-in-law and Nick Khan, and he's bitter and upset and not showing it, or maybe he is showing it, just not publicly. That's the thing, is who knows? But, he might decide to get involved in some other venture. The problem is, I mean, he's not quite Harvey Weinstein or Kevin Spacey, but it's in that category, you know, of you know, Charlie Rose types, the old guy who, is credibly accused of being a creep and using his power in ways that made subordinates uncomfortable to a point that, you know, led to scandal. And those men just tend to go away and not come back to the public eye. So I don't know. You know, I mean, I don't know that Vince McMahon, if he thinks he can just pick up the phone Monday and start calling people going, hey, you know, I got this idea for a business venture. Let's reinvent soccer by playing it on tennis courts, you know, whatever. You know, like, I don't know that he's going to get some the callbacks that he might have gotten 2 months ago from people. And maybe he doesn't realize that. So I don't know. Maybe he doesn't know what he's going to do with himself. I bet he'll be in the gym. I don't think he's going to stop going to the gym. Okay. Oh, man. We got a lot of calls to get to. Okay. I told 516 we'd try again. 516, I'm giving you a warning here so you can not blast us with background noise, and we'll give you one more shot here. 516, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from.
Hello. Mike from Boca Raton, Florida.
Hey, Mike. How are you? Awesome. Good. Thanks for calling, Mike.
I got a question for you.
Well,
first off, as far as Brock not being in the building and all that, was that all just a planned angle or you don't know yet?
I don't know yet. I've been joking with people. He just went, you know, just went out to get a sandwich or went, you know, or maybe needed to clear his head. Yeah, maybe he went to clear his head because, you know, he really looked up to Vince, and but he never planned to not come back. You know, I don't know that yet. The fact that they didn't mention him during the show, as Mike pointed out, might have been a ploy to make his return even more surprising. So I just have to be honest. I don't know the exact answer right now, but I know people backstage were thinking he walked out and, you know, it was sort of a Sasha Naomi thing, but it might not have been. And I suspect we'll find out soon.
Also, as far as the improprieties and everything that Vince is accused of. So without going into too much detail, but Rene Dupree has a podcast, right? And he's saying some of the girls' names that may have been implicated. Some of them are no longer with us, so I won't mention her name. But you can look it up if you want to find out. So if there's more coming out.
I will.
And, yeah.
I want those. Mike, I want those names to be mentioned on a platform like this only when the women themselves volunteer.
Yeah, but somebody's no longer with
otherwise,
us. She's deceased. The girl's deceased, so I won't even mention it.
Yeah.
Is that
I agree.
Okay.
I mean, then let her family, you know,
but
bring it up
family,
or something like that.
I think she has a daughter. Or something. So,
yeah.
Okay. And that's about it. You have a good night.
All right, cool. Thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. All right, let's try. Oh, someone just dropped off. I was going to go too. All right, we'll try 347 one more time here. 347, we're going to you. If you called in from that area code, go ahead and state your name and where you're calling from. 347-463, that's you. No problem. We will move on here to Justin in Charlotte. Justin, welcome to the show. Thanks for calling. What's on your mind tonight about SmackDown and Vince McMahon?
Thanks for having me, guys. As far as the show, I agree with what you said earlier in the show, Wade, when for the first time, you know, you watch a WWE product and you don't think about Vince McMahon's involvement. And so when I saw Austin Theory tonight, my first thing was, well, how high is Stephanie and Triple H on this guy? Like, is this push as imminent as it was even 3 days ago? And so I agree with you on that as far as watching the show and not thinking what Vince thought is about them on television or even their push in 3 or 4 months. Mike, what do you think about that?
Yeah, you know, I had seen a lot of people kind of speculating on what Vince, you know, leaving might mean for Theory. And, you know, I think obviously that Vince, it's part of a storyline, but I think in reality, obviously Vince is very high on Theory. He's got everything that he would look for in a superstar. And, you know, we've seen that time and time again over the years. But I think it might be a little bit overstated because, you know, Triple H really was the one that signed Theory. I think Triple H and those around him were the ones that scouted Theory when he was in Evolve and you know, he was working other places. And, you know, they were the ones that brought him into the company. And Triple H, you know, put him into The Way in NXT and put him in featured spots and, you know, So I feel like Triple H obviously is going to have a lot of influence moving forward. His wife, Stephanie McMahon, is going to have a lot of influence moving forward. So my thought is that Triple H, I think, maybe not as high on Theory as Vince McMahon was, but I think he was high on Theory too, or else he wouldn't have signed him at, you know, 22 years old or 21 years old or whatever he was when he signed him. He wouldn't have been, you know, kind of like working on that Evolve pay-per-view that was broadcast on WWE Network and putting Theory in a featured match on that card as well, if he didn't have a lot of confidence in Theory. So I think that, you know, he has the Money in the Bank contract. I think that a lot of directions that they were going to go in before Vince stepped down are probably still the directions that they're going to be going in, at least for the foreseeable future. So I don't really have any concerns about Theory kind of falling off or not being pushed to the top like he would have been had Vince still been in power.
And this is too soon to make any to expect major changes in terms of talent that gets pushed. And I think some good decisions have been made, and I think there's some decisions that, you know, we wondered, why is this person getting a push? Isn't someone else there? And I'm just really curious how a different set of a different creative vision changes who gets pushed and how they're pushed. And, you know, there's going to be a cultural change behind the scenes with Vince not there as a presence every week, and in the fear and intimidation people felt, but also, you know, there's so many, you know, people have mixed feelings about him. People who know they have reason to not think highly of him still have really positive feelings about him in other ways. You know, it'd be like people who are very frustrated by him also feel like they've learned a lot from him and are appreciative of, quote, the opportunities, even though it's always a two-way street. You know, every employee helps the boss make money and succeed, and those employees are as much a part of the equation as the boss is, and the boss should be thanking the employees. Stephanie, you know, paid tribute to, which I thought was nice, that, you know, Vince was thanking everybody, and that was a nice message, you know, to put out there. But people have conflicted feelings about him, and there's going to be some wrestlers who right now have fear of what it means because they've been playing the Vince McMahon game, how to present themselves, how to carry themselves, how to, you know, kiss up to Vince or say the right things or do the right things to seem like they're Vince's person. And now he's gone. And there's new people in charge. And there's going to be some reshuffling. But, you know, Theory, as an example, is somebody I think is just talented and isn't somebody that Triple H, for instance, is going to talk people into not pushing or have the power to not push. Justin, I'll throw it back to you.
Think you guys think Omos is probably having some nightmares tonight?
That's going to be, you know, he's a great example, Mike, of somebody, you know, I always think of Vince McMahon in the picture of him with Andre the Giant in the 70s. And you know, it's just, Andre was such a big deal to Vince McMahon. And I don't think that's a work. I don't think, you know, I think there's things people say about other wrestlers that it's part of hype and promotion. And it's not sincere, but I think Vince has a genuine awe for Andre. And I think he likes having that mix of different characters. You've got, you know, the feisty Butch and you've got the giant Omos. And it's always kind of part of Vince's vision for a roster to have, no matter how little talent they have, big people get pushed. No matter how much talent they have, small people end up with silly roles. And Omos is somebody who probably should be concerned. But maybe not, you know? I mean, maybe Hunter and Stephanie and Ryan Ward and Ed Koski and whoever ends up in charge think, no, we kind of agree with that. It's all we know. They might end up using him different than Vince did or talk about him differently. Maybe we don't get the same camera angles looking up at him in a cartoonish way. But Omos might be fine. They just use him differently. What do you think, Mike?
Yeah. We do know Stephanie's affinity for Andre the Giant. She tells us all the time how they were best friends. Maybe she has a similar feeling for Omos. But, yeah, without a doubt, I think maybe more than anybody, Omos is the type of guy that would feel like a Vince McMahon project and somebody that he would want to push. Like, yeah, he was signed in NXT, but like he was called up before he ever even appeared on NXT television, which I would assume is a Vince McMahon type of call. So I think he's been a pet project for him. And I feel like even before this happened, Omos kind of been on a downturn for a little bit compared to where he was. Like, he lost a feud with Lashley, which generally isn't something you would do with a giant early in his tenure on the main roster, you know, as a singles guy. So I feel like the shine was already starting to come off of him a little bit. I do feel like, you know, Vince being out of the picture, that that probably, you know, it's not a good thing for Omos. Although, if Bruce Pritchard is remaining in this role for a little while, I think that, again, he's kind of an extension of Vince in a lot of ways. So I don't think he's in imminent danger, but if changes are made on the creative side where Bruce Pritchard isn't the lead guy at some point in the near future, then I think that maybe Omos should start worrying a little bit for sure.
Justin, back to you.
Yeah, another thing I wanted to talk about. I don't know what you guys thought about it because no one's talked about it yet, but that face-to-face with Ronda and Liv Morgan, I wasn't feeling it. And when I see these things from Liv Morgan, I'm just kind of reminded of like, oh, this is why they didn't push her back earlier in the year when she had that feud with Becky. It's just, I mean, it was just awkward. And I know everything involving Ronda and talking is awkward, but it just – it wasn't the type of thing I think Liv Morgan needed for this kind of match that she's going to have with Ronda Rousey next week. And, you know, I don't know if they're going to take the belt off her at SummerSlam or not, but, you know, I know the crowd's behind her, but I didn't think the match with Natty was too good last week. And then this promo, maybe she has the crowd support, but I'm just thinking Liv's just not main event material.
Mike, what'd you think of Liv? I got a kick out of the fact that they mic'd them up this week with wireless mics, but then Kayla's standing there with a handheld mic to actually interview them. But then Ronda sent her away, and that happened last week with Paul Heyman, and they sent, was it Sarah Schreiber away? But she had the microphone in her hand. Maybe it was Megan Moran. But, and yet you could still hear everybody. So I felt like they were self-conscious about that last week, so they wired them up this week to explain it. But how did you forecast that Ronda was going to send away the person assigned to do the interview so that they would need microphones? It still doesn't make any sense, but I give them credit for seemingly at least thinking about it a little bit.
Yeah. I mean, I wasn't a fan of the segment overall, and I just think that you're kind of putting both women in a position to fail because Ronda's struggles on the mic are very well documented. I think that she would really benefit from having a Paul Heyman or even working with, like, somebody who's at least marginally better on her than the mic, like a Shayna Baszler, somebody like that, is like a partner or part of a stable or something like that. And then you add Liv Morgan to the equation who, you know, I'm kind of in the same boat with Liv Morgan. I like her. I like her passion. I'm all for giving her an opportunity to be champion because obviously, you know, whether I see the same things in her that other people do or not, obviously, the crowd is very much behind her. Obviously, a lot of people wanted her to get this opportunity. And I think it's because, you know, she's a longtime fan. She worked hard to get to this spot and all that. And I respect that. But, you know, and I think she's decent in the ring, but her mic work just isn't there for me. It's not at the level, even close to the level it needs to be. Like, you can be a top-tier worker, and then maybe your mic work isn't as important. But when you're, you know, middling, then you have to have that extra something special on the mic in terms of charisma. And I just don't get that from her. I feel like all of her promos are just, she's trying to remember something, remember what she's supposed to say. She doesn't have natural pauses or natural actions in a promo. And it doesn't sound like she's talking to you. It doesn't sound like she's having a conversation, which is what all the great promo people do. It sounds like she's trying to remember things and it's robotic. And I think that's the issue. And she's just not getting it done in that respect for me. And Ronda has that same issue. And you're putting these two women who struggled the same thing in a feud against each other. And then the third wheel in the feud is Natty, who, again, I like Natty, but again, not the Rock on the mic. So I don't understand why they're putting them in these situations that obviously they're going to fail in because they don't have somebody to kind of help them through an aspect of their game that they're not necessarily the best at.
Justin, anything else for us before we move on?
No. Last thing I just want to say about Vince, you know, he's been public enemy number one for a long time, and obviously these allegations are a terrible thing and everything like that. But at the end of the day, the reason why podcasts like this tonight is available is for what he's been able to do with the wrestling business over the last 40 years. So the appreciation of making me a wrestling fan and all the great moments over the years that I've had, rather it was his creative vision or him signing off on it, we've been able to get that. And so from a fan perspective, I'm appreciative that. Mike, I love Ringworth Radio, listen to it every week. And obviously, Wade, I'm an avid listener of yours. So I was glad to call in and speak to you guys tonight. I appreciate it.
Thanks, man. Appreciate it.
Thank you, Justin. Yeah. I do want to say something, because people say this sometimes, you know, like, well, if it wasn't for Vince McMahon, where would wrestling be? And we don't know, but I've been a fan long enough to know that the first ticket I bought to a wrestling show had nothing to do with Vince McMahon. It was in the AWA territory. And I also know that there were a lot of promoters vying to be the nationally available, nationally syndicated on national cable promoter. The Von Erichs, on the power of their syndicated network, Fritz Von Erich, were going to syndicated their show nationally, World Class Championship Wrestling with the Von Erichs and the Freebirds, and had a strong lineup and wanted to travel the country and run shows everywhere. And you know, Bill Watts wanted to expand nationally. The AWA was on ESPN for years, and you know, they were available from, you know, Chicago to San Francisco and Denver and Minneapolis, and covered a huge part of the geographic area of the United States as sort of their territory. And they had Hulk Hogan before Vince McMahon did in Hulkamania. And Hulk could have stayed with AWA, married one of the Gagne daughters, and helped helped Vern Gagne secure a big TV deal. Jim Crockett Jr. had the power of TBS and was on national TV and turned Ric Flair and many others into national stars. At the same time that Vince McMahon was syndicating nationally, pro wrestling would have existed and would have thrived had Vince McMahon been hit by a bus in 1981. And it just would have expanded in a different way. It would have taken a different shape. And certainly different wrestlers would have been pushed and different business decisions would have been made. But I'm not convinced it would be any smaller or any bigger than it was, because Vince isn't the only one who thought, hey, there's this technology of cable TV and pay-per-view. Let's make money on it. Obviously, boxing did it. MMA did it. Other sports tried it. That was going to happen. And where there's big money, there's big production values. Vince McMahon deserves credit for a lot of things, but the notion that pro wrestling wouldn't exist, and just that a podcast like this wouldn't exist without Vince McMahon, I just disagree. I think pro wrestling would have gone on. It's just the formula is something people like. And it's not something Vince McMahon tricked people into liking because of something specific he did. Many, many promoters and many promotions worldwide appeal to wrestling fans that had nothing to do with Vince McMahon. So I don't want to, rain on the celebration of Vince's ambition and success with the big super shows like WrestleMania, but Dusty Rhodes and Jim Crockett were booking stadium shows. The Great American Bash Tour started as an outdoor stadium tour show. Around the time of WrestleMania 3, you know, not long after, Vern Gagne was naming special AWA events with special theme names, AWA Star Wars, 83 or whatever it was. These things were going to happen. I think people who are newer to the business just think Vince McMahon is to pro wrestling as, I don't know, you know, Steve Jobs is to user-friendly interface computers or something, but it would have happened. Mike, anything you want to add to that?
Yeah, I think your view on Vince McMahon really has a lot to do with how old you are, when you were brought up, what you watched initially in wrestling, all that type of stuff. Like me, I'm 32 years old. My first exposure to wrestling, I started watching in 1995 when I was 5 years old, watching WWF Superstars on Saturday mornings and watching Monday Night Raw and then eventually watching Nitro and all that type of stuff. So, when I look at Vince McMahon, I often – and WWE/WWF, I often look at it through like a nostalgic perspective, because the reason I love wrestling and have enjoyed it is because – it was my favorite thing as a kid, and I love the larger-than-life characters and all that type of stuff. And for me, I was primarily getting that in WWF. I view Vince McMahon as that guy who was the announcer, and before I even knew he was the owner of WWF. Like, so I have like these nostalgic feelings towards him and towards the company. That's part of why I still love it today, because I'm big on nostalgia, whether it's with wrestling or anything else. And that's the kind of stuff that makes me happy. And I think there's a lot of people that feel that way. And I think the people that view Vince in a positive light kind of look at it in that respect. I think certainly wrestling would still be around today. Wrestling would be thriving. But maybe it would look different. I don't know. Is it possible that somebody would have had the same vision as Vince in terms of like a WrestleMania type of show, in terms of making it a global phenomenon, in terms of making their company publicly traded and big enough to have mainstream appeal and have coverage on ESPN and all that type of stuff and have that type of crossover? It's possible. but it's not guaranteed. But Vince did do it. So I think he certainly deserves his credit in that regard. But, yeah, I think wrestling would exist. I think people would love wrestling. I don't think, you know, it would have just went away if Vince McMahon didn't make it what it is today. But he certainly did make it what it is today.
Yeah, I think Ted Turner, you know, had wrestling as a valuable part of his superstation. And I think Ted would have said, hey, we're selling out these buildings. Why don't we run a stadium?
Sure.
And why don't we have pyro? And, hey, maybe we should bring in some celebrities. Like, I don't know. You know, I mean, I think celebrities being involved in wrestling predates Vince McMahon, too. I am skeptical of the idea that there's much that happened that wouldn't have happened if it weren't Vince McMahon. But that's not denying that his vision, like, if we look at, you know, Tony Khan's vision for pro wrestling, even with the Vince McMahon example, it's different. And so everybody's going to have, everybody who has a position of having revenue and power in the pro wrestling business as a promoter is going to have a vision for how they want to present it, and it would have been different. But I just don't, you know, Vince would always say, oh, that we're out of the smoke-filled arenas. And even that there was a Associated Press story that ran, you know, Vince McMahon took pro wrestling out of smoke-filled arenas. Like, no, smoking got banned around the time Vince McMahon became promoter in arenas. That's why there's not smoke. It's not because Vince McMahon, there's smoke-filled arenas that are sitting around, and Vince said, let's go to the smoke-free buildings. It's just silly. You know, it's just like a lot of these things were just more correlation than causation with technology and expansion. That said, that's part of the big picture conversation about Vince is where did he take this pro wrestling industry in terms of the direction he went that others would not have. And I think one of the areas is, the, as you put it, kind of the larger than life characters or the more kind of cartoonish characters that appeal to kids. You know, he overtly went after kids, and there's a generation of people who feel they wouldn't have been fans without it. I became a fan, you know, prior to that, but it was also the larger than life characters of, you know, that the AWA is promoting at the time that I became a fan, that Mad Dog Vachon, the Jesse the Body Ventura with the boas, and the Crusher. I mean, there were just Baron Von Raschke. There were a whole slew of larger than life characters who stood out that would fit right in with what people watched 10 years later or 15 or 20 years later when they became fans watching Vince McMahon. So there's just a lot of things people think Vince invented that were there just in a way that was different to match the era it was in. But anyway, let's keep moving on here. There's so much to think about and talk about when it comes to Vince. It's amazing. We can go off on these tangents. Well, let's go to 919. This could be the Raleigh area. Go ahead, state your name and where you're calling from.
My name's Kevin. I was just calling to see, what do you think that do you think we'll see like an influx of more indie talent now that Triple H is taking over the talent relations? And also, I want to know, what's the general relationship between Nick Khan and Triple H?
Two good questions. Do you say your name was Kevin?
Yep.
Kevin, and what city are you from?
I'm Phoenix. I'm at, but I have a Raleigh number. I used to live in Raleigh.
Gotcha. Yep. I know everyone's switching. You know, whenever you move, you keep your number now. So there's never a way to know. So Triple H and Nick Khan is a very key relationship going forward. And I don't know. I'm super curious to see how this plays out. I don't think Triple H would have gotten the position that he has if Nick Khan didn't like and respect him. The story that I've heard from more multiple people is Nick Khan did not have just one circle of people that were his people, that he managed to be connected to everybody but with some distance. And so I'm going to press harder now and try to get more of a sense, and it might be difficult, it might not be, to do it quickly, of who he has observed as the guys that he wants on his team. But it's going to be real tough to objectively tell, Mike, because the co-CEO is the wife of Triple H.
Mm-hmm.
And there's not a lot of options for Nick Khan, who's not a wrestling person. He is now, by definition, for the time he's been with WWE. But he doesn't have a lot of connections pre-WWE to a bunch of other people he decided to bring in. Like if Jim Ross took over, you know, WWE after Vince McMahon left, you know, at some point. Well, Jim has all these connections from his years in Mid-South and WCW and, heck, Smoky Mountain Wrestling. I mean, it's like, oh, maybe he'll bring Jim Cornette in. Nick doesn't have that deep those deep roots. So in a way, Triple H becoming head of talent relations is just a logical thing. Wrestlers like him. He's good at the job. Laurinaitis is gone. Hunter is healthy. It's the obvious move to make. It doesn't mean that he's a Nick Khan guy at this point. So, Mike, what have you heard? What have you read? And what do you think?
Yeah, you know, I really don't know a lot about that relationship. And I think part of it is, you know, Triple H, when Nick Khan first came out in, was primarily working in NXT. And then, you know, he had his heart issues and he was gone for a little while. And he came back and he wasn't initially full time. And now he's really kind of back to full time. So I honestly don't know that they've had the chance to even build a relationship as much as Nick Khan would have been able to build one with some of the other people, you know, they work more closely with. So I really don't know what the relationship would be, but, you know, you brought up an interesting point. Like, Stephanie is the co-CEO, and I think, you know, she's generally going to do what she believes is best for the business, but she's always going to go to bat for her husband, too. So Triple H has a huge ally in the same position as what Nick Khan holds. So, you know, I think that they kind of had the power in their court a little bit more, and that maybe Nick Khan will have to just kind of tip his hat in certain situations and defer to their expertise in wrestling areas a lot of the time. So it will be an interesting kind of dynamic and, you know, balance of power to see how that plays out. There was a mention about whether, you know, Triple H being head of talent relations is going to mean more independent wrestlers coming in and less, you know, kind of collegiate athletes and that type of thing. But, you know, I thought this was always an overstated thing. Like when they switched to NXT 2.0 and they're like, no more independent wrestlers. It's all going to be people with, who are 25 or younger and with no previous wrestling experience. And, you know, that's already been proven wrong because they've brought in people with, like right after that happened, they signed the Usos brother, Solo Sikoa. And he's been a huge featured part of NXT 2.0. And he had previous wrestling experience and he didn't come from, you know, a sports background. And, you know, that was also overstated. I think WWE now, and it always has been, they've always are going to sign and bring in the people that they think they can make into superstars. Whether they have previous wrestling experience or not. There's a lot of people who become top stars who were wrestlers previously, and there's a lot of people who become top stars who had no wrestling experience whatsoever before they came to WWE, and I think they're going to stick with that plan and just, you know, evaluate every situation independently of another one, and if they think this person can help them and be a star, then they'll sign them. So I don't think we're going to see much of a change as far as that goes. What I could see is maybe some, you know, people who have previous wrestling experience who are maybe bigger names who are coming from an AEW or something like that might be a little bit more inclined to want to sign with WWE with Triple H and Stephanie in charge than they may have been with Vince in charge.
You know, we never knew what Triple H would have done in NXT unfiltered without Vince trying to promote NXT, one, to succeed on its own, but two, please Vince McMahon or not upset Vince McMahon. And Vince absolutely there were times he showed disregard for in NXT's independence, you know, the way that he treated NXT talent when they came in or paid a visit, abandoned existing storylines like Gargano and Ciampa, how Cole was treated briefly. I always talk during the NXT, Triple H's kind of takeover era of NXT. We don't fully know what Triple H would do if he weren't always, again, filtering everything through how will Vince perceive this. And now, in theory, that's gone unless he feels pressure through Stephanie, who's going to stay in touch with her dad, to do things a certain way. So maybe that still is there in a different way. But Hunter running NXT did not have an issue with promoting smaller guys. But was that because Hunter was playing a PR game with the internet to try to build up support strategically on the internet so that it might help him be seen as the heir apparent to take over for Vince? And that deep down, he thinks, well, for small buildings and to be the alternative to Raw and SmackDown, smaller guys who have great work rate and athleticism is the way to go. But if we want to sell out stadiums, of course, I got to do what Vince did. And that's what we don't know. You know, that's what's going to be, again, one of the fascinating revelations about so many people is what do people – it's like, you know, Mike, if there's an assistant coach or an assistant head coach even, you know, in some of these teams, when the head coach leaves – and the assistant gets promoted, the assistant didn't get to implement the approach to team chemistry, on-field strategy, on ice, on-court strategy, until they're the person in charge. We don't know until they're in charge. So I don't know. You know what I mean? Because Hunter went to bodybuilding shows with Stephanie. He was a bigger wrestler. He took digs at smaller wrestlers and was kind of a prick about it sometimes. And yet he's beloved in NXT, and people sincerely feel that he had the best interest in mind when it came to the women and smaller and medium-sized wrestlers. There's mixed signals with Hunter. And so has he evolved? Has he grown up? Is he away from some bad influences who made him sort of cynical about smaller wrestlers, and he thinks wrestling has changed and he's more aligned with Tony Khan in that way than Vince McMahon? That remains to be seen. I mean, we don't know. That's one of the most fascinating things about this massive transition today in the wrestling industry, is everybody is recalibrating that they can, in a way, now they can speak freely and express themselves. There's a wrestler from WWE today who texted just going, I feel like I can finally speak my mind without fear. Because the feeling is that Triple H and Stephanie aren't going to be like Vince McMahon in that way, where you get punished for disagreeing with something. So it's going to be interesting. Kevin, I'll throw back to you for any follow-up on your questions or a new topic.
Those are only two questions I had. I did think it was interesting that, there might be a new factor with AEW talent, maybe when their contract's up, you know, maybe taking a second look at WWE where that wasn't an option before.
I talked about that with Rich Fan earlier on the 90 minutes we spent talking about Vince McMahon and the ramifications of this. Again, I mentioned at the top of the show, that's VIP exclusive, so people can go VIP and listen to it right after this, pwtorch.com/goVIP, to get information on signing up or on Patreon. You can sign up on your iPhone through your Apple account or credit card and PayPal. One of the things I brought up on that show is Tony Khan is, you know, being kind of, you know, trolling and snarky on Twitter about this, or at least that's my interpretation and many others' interpretation of the tone he took. This could really raise the price to retain some of the talent that Vince McMahon would not have been all that interested in otherwise. This could really affect Tony Khan's business if WWE, with very deep pockets, just says, there's some guy, you know, whoever's in charge now says, there's some people who Vince McMahon wouldn't have been interested in or would have been a waste of money. We can make money with them. And it does. It just wipes the slate clean on so many wrestlers who either wouldn't want to go there or would want to go there, but Vince wouldn't want them. And we just have to see how this shakes out in terms of who's in charge of creative, who's in charge of hiring and firing, and what that philosophy is. But this is if Tony Khan was book planning the last 3+ years a certain strategy, he needs to step back and potentially recalibrate greatly a number of things, because he's been playing opposite of Vince McMahon, kind of the alternative to the Vince vision. And now there's a whole new vision that none of us know what it's going to be, and he's going to have to adjust to compete with that. And it might work out really well for him, but it's going to take a different game plan in all likelihood. Kevin, any closing words?
Nope, that's all I had. Thank you.
Great, appreciate it. Call again.
Yep, bye.
Yep. All right, let's move next to Grant in Detroit. And we still got Deke and Sean, and we got Javier coming up too. Like I said, we had a lot of calls. Some people dropped off because we're running long, but those are the ones we're going to be taking next, so hold tight, you guys. Grant, thanks for calling. What's in your mind about SmackDown and Vince McMahon?
Well, I definitely didn't get a chance to really watch the whole show, but my only question is, with Vince out of power, and you kind of see, people trying to figure out what's their next move, but I don't really know what the relationship is, but do you see a possibility of maybe Shane McMahon coming in and having some type of role?
It's amazing we got, you know, this far into the conversation, Mike, and Shane McMahon's name didn't come up, but there's a reason for that. I know people cheer him, but he's never behind the scenes been respected as a particularly focused, disciplined, smart wrestling mind, and or on the business side. It just, his falling out with Vince McMahon was pretty strong, pretty serious, but with Vince largely out of the picture, now it would be up to somebody else to decide, hey, Shane got a bad rap, Vince made life miserable for him, Shane was constantly trying to prove himself to Vince in a way that was unbecoming or counterproductive. But there's something there, and now he can come in and be himself and be given confidence in a way that he didn't have when he was around his dad, just because every parent-child relationship is different, and some are productive and helpful, and others are counterproductive and not helpful. So I can't rule it out, even though my inclination is to say this is not going to be – I don't think this is going to be an opening for Shane to come back. I think Stephanie and Hunter and Nick Khan are the power base right now, and I just don't know what Shane McMahon brings to the table. As a guy in his early 50s who just – I don't think there's people in WWE who – that I know of who think he'd be valuable. I mean, just to be blunt about it. But I could be proven wrong, and that's why I say maybe some of that comes from the dynamic with Shane and Vince that just put Shane kind of behind an eight ball. But I just think things would have shown up as far as Shane's acumen and creative vision by now that people would whisper about as just sort of being pent up and repressed but ready to burst out if Vince ever left. And I just haven't heard that from people who know and follow him well. Mike, your thoughts?
Yeah, you know, I admittedly don't have, you know, much – inside information regarding the family dynamics in the McMahon family. But the inclination I always got was kind of that, you know, Vince kind of viewed Stephanie more as the heir apparent than Shane. And, you know, look no further than the famous birthday tweets where he has these long, beautiful messages for Stephanie and for Triple H and how great they are and how much they mean to him. And then his tweet to Shane McMahon is just, "Happy birthday, Shane McMahon." I think that's
the greatest disappointment of my life.
Right. Yeah. He didn't say it, but he didn't have to say it.
No, but it's sort of implied.
Right. So, you know, I do get that sense. You know, maybe, you know, that brother-sister relationship, him and Stephanie, I think that might be an easier situation for him. And I think that, you know, obviously Stephanie, if the situation was right, I think she would be willing to bring him in. And, you know, even before Vince stepped down, my thought was always that, yeah, you know, him and Shane had some type of issue, but this has happened multiple times and he'll come back at some point. And my feeling now that Vince is gone is, he'll come back at some point. It might not be some type of a creative force or whatever it might be. It might be just as an on-screen character, but I think that regardless, at some point, he'll be back in the fold because it is a family business for him as much as it is for Vince and for Stephanie. And even if he's not viewed as the person that's going to take over the company and lead it into the future, I still think that there will be a role for him if he wants to have it at some point.
What I think I'm curious about with this, with the Hunter and Stephanie Nick Khan dynamic is, you know, what is the fallout from what happened with NXT? How much of what has been said by Hunter, by Shawn Michaels, is playing a political game because of the reality that somebody like Nick Khan had the power to do what he did? And Hunter was, you know, humiliated publicly by Vince McMahon and Nick Khan when they were making decisions to gut NXT, get rid of Hunter's people, revamp the whole thing. But then you got Shawn Michaels going, "No, it was good. We needed to do it." And you got Hunter coming back going, you know, "No, change was needed." I don't know if actually Hunter said it quite that way. But, you know, did that get blown out of proportion? What happened there? Or was Hunter, as I've reported, you know, burning the candle from both ends? You know, and you know, like people were saying, you know, it's a guy who never drank caffeine. You know, he was kind of straight edge before CM Punk was straight edge in a lot of ways. And he wouldn't drink caffeine. And people were like, he's drinking iced coffee all day just to get through the day. Someone, you know, said on a takeover media call a few years back, "Hunter, you're going to do WrestleMania again?" He's like, "I don't have the bandwidth for it." You know, he goes, "You don't just lace up the boots and do it." It's like at his age, it's a multi-month process to look the part and athletically not embarrass yourself. He goes, "I just don't have the bandwidth with everything in NXT." So, you know, did the massive changeover with NXT and the dismantling of Team Triple H that he built, was it malicious or nefarious or a power play? Or was it Hunter's burning out and we've got some new ideas and the network, you know, USA Network wants us to show we're making changes to try to take things to the next level. And you know, it turned out it wasn't. So the point of that is Hunter holding a grudge, or does he look at that and go, "Man, you know, Nick and Vince saw, you know, where I was headed and the stress and that the booking wasn't where it once was, and I did need time off and there need to be changed." So does Stephanie hold a grudge over that, or did she orchestrate it because she was worried about Paul, her husband, you know, and she thinks it was good that that happened ultimately in the big picture, because he was, you know, he wasn't himself, and he was. So that's the part where I just go, sometimes there's conventional wisdom out there and people reacting to what it seems on the surface. And sometimes we're surprised a little later when we find out what, you know, what was really going on. And that's the part where now Stephanie and Nick Khan are co-CEOs. Is there resentment there, or is there an understanding? And does Hunter look at Nick and go, I don't hold a grudge. That was what needed to happen, and I get it. So we'll see. You know, we'll see, and we'll find out one way or the other as time goes on. And you know, and by the way, Paul Levesque, Triple H, I'm told has a reputation. This is someone who knows him well, for moving on and bearing the hatchet with people who he's had issues with. So even if he was upset at one time, he's the type of person, and not everybody's like this, who can absolutely work in good faith with someone who he had an issue with at one time in the past. And Stephanie's pretty good about that too. Example, Paul Heyman. I mean, those two get along now. And boy, did they go to war, you know, a couple decades ago. So, you know, what was true a year ago might not be true today. What was true 5 years ago might not be true today. And sometimes talent butts heads and have different ideas, and then circumstances change and they come together and work magic together. So there's a lot to be learned. All right, Grant, back to you for any follow-up.
That was about it. Like I said, I didn't actually get a chance to watch the show. I saw the only segment I actually watched was the beginning of the show with Stephanie and then the Street Profits and the Usos starting off, which that was a little confusing because the Usos came out to confront Theory and then teamed with them. So that was kind of odd. But yeah, other than that, yeah, that's all I had.
Great. Thanks, Grant. Any thoughts on that, Mike?
Yeah, you know, I kind of like the dynamic that they gave us with the Usos in Theory, where, yeah, they were teaming with them, but Paul Heyman was pulling the string, saying this is a guy that might be attempting to cash in on Roman Reigns, so I want you to, you know, take care of him. And they essentially did that. They attempted to do that by you know, wrestling the match and getting some shots in on their opponents at SummerSlam, but also then, you know, carrying out Roman Reigns and Paul Heyman's wishes by trying to take out Theory as well. So I thought that was kind of an intriguing dynamic for the main event at the very least.
Yeah, and you know, I always say the 52-week a year, Raw and SmackDown, we need a TV main event, and we need a secondary, and we need a couple other matches to carry these shows. Leads to a lot of matches that in a vacuum you're like, why would they do that?
Mm-hmm.
But it's a challenge. You gotta have a main event, and sometimes it's rehashing things. Obviously, you could have, like, AEW has a really deep roster. They rotate who's in matches, and there's not a lot of repetition, and that's absolutely an approach that can be taken. But that's not WWE's approach. Every match generally is tied to the next pay-per-view, and every main event certainly is. And I thought it was really smart, the segment where Heyman went to the Usos and said, don't take out Theory during the match. Use him. Get the victory, then take him out.
Mm-hmm.
And it's like, you know, I mean, probably he shouldn't have said that in front of a camera. you know, like if you're, you know, thinking realistically, you know, Paul, you know that Theory might get a text from a friend who's watching at home going, you might be getting ready for your match, but guess what Paul just said the plan is for you. So it wasn't a brilliant angle in that sense, because I feel it's, you know, a little suspect that Paul would do that in front of a camera, the way kind of the narrative structure set up with pro wrestling. But you could tell they were self-conscious about that and wanted to kind of explain it. And, you know, sometimes people with common enemies come together briefly and or they think they're going to outwit the other. All right, cool. Grant, thanks for calling. We'll go to Deke and then Sean after that. Deke from Michigan, thanks for calling. Good to hear from you. Your thoughts on the big night tonight, big day today?
Oh, dang, Wade, it's crazy, man. And I got two quick things because I know you're at the two-hour mark. One is personal to you. The other one is personal to me. The last few have not answered this question that you asked at the top of the show, which was, would you have contributed to the Thank You Vince chant? And, man, that's a tough question because for years and years, I've crapped on Vince, and now I appreciate what he contributed and all that, and my gosh, he was amazing as a kid, and I'm, you know, 40-year-old guy, so I'm an 80s kid and Hulk Hogan and all this. And then, you know, 91, 92, when his other issues happened, things started sliding. And then he kind of went in the toilet with the Attitude Era. I don't care what anybody says. They went with toilet wrestling and hot-shotting, and that built him back up. But beyond that, you know, he since then, the 20 years, outside of a few things here and there, as a whole, it has not been good. So I have found it hilarious when people get on Twitter and online and here and there, and they just murder this guy. But then his music hits, and they turn into seven-year-old people, and they start bowing to him when he comes out. And I've had a massive problem with that. And me and my friends have sat here for years and go, these idiots, rip him on Twitter, rip him, rip him, rip him. Then No Chance hits, and they, like, I don't know, it's like Jesus came in front of them or something, you know, and they start bowing. They're like, Hosanna. With the palms and everything. It's Palm Sunday all of a sudden. And it's kind of funny. This is a little different, though, if you knew, which your one caller who was there did not know. So it's a little different, and I will take it back to a personal experience. I don't like The Undertaker at all. Now, overrated does not mean suck, which a lot of people get that confused. Like, if you have The Undertaker rated as the fifth greatest wrestler of all time, but I have him at 15th, well, that means he's overrated in my book. That doesn't mean he sucks. So a lot of people get that mixed up. But so we were at WrestleMania 33, Roman against Undertaker. And we were there, and we were, you know, we're not Undertaker fans at all, and we're being obnoxious and whatever. Well, at the end of it, like, oh my gosh, this guy just retired. He put his hat and his boots in the ring. Okay, this is it, right? And obviously it wasn't, but at that point we thought it was. So even us who were being obnoxious all night and not Undertaker fans at all, stood up, clapped, gave the guy the respect he deserved because of what he contributed to the business. Now, this Vince thing, obviously Undertaker, I just don't like the guy. He didn't do anything morally wrong, illegally wrong, anything wrong. It's totally different. But I can understand why people are torn on this subject. I totally understand that. So, you know, and I will tell anyone, I will argue anyone all day that The Undertaker's overrated. Doesn't suck, overrated. Totally different. But I stood up and clapped for that man because I knew what he did for wrestling. So I don't knock anybody down for doing their Vince chant tonight. Obviously what he's done is, if it's true and whatever, it had not good, not good. Contributions to wrestling are not to be denied. And, you know, you see all these, to be Bobby Heenan, nickel and dimers, on Twitter telling millionaires, billionaires online all day when they say, thank you, Vince. And these guys who were pumping gas are telling them, oh, you're an idiot. Man, you don't know nothing. So, you know, who are we to say anything to anybody about that? So that's that. I know you probably don't have anything to add to that. Maybe you do. If you do, I got a question.
Well, here's what I'll say, Deke. I'm gonna pause you, Deke, and just say, I think there's great value in the opinion of the target market customer. And I think everybody's opinion has value. They should be taken in context as one opinion. And obviously different people, you know, bring a different level of seriousness to their opinions. But if somebody is critical of the product because it isn't ringing their bell, it isn't working for them, I don't think you dismiss them because they pump gas for a living, or whatever. And sometimes I think, who was it, who lost me a little bit on Twitter, Mike, do you remember who ended up closing out with some dig at, like, you know, janitors or people who pump gas on their tweet when they were going back and forth and in some wrestling Twitter thing last week.
Oh, I don't know if I saw that. I'm not sure.
I got it. It'll come back to me as I think about it more. But I remember going, yeah, I was with you. But then you had to end with that. Like, there's dignity. You know, President Biden says it all the time. There's dignity in work. There's dignity in a 40-hour work week and just showing up, working hard, and contributing to society in your own way. So, and Deke, I'm going to put you back on, and you can, you know, defend yourself. I don't mean to blow that out of proportion because I know what you're. I kind of know what you're getting at. But I don't think because somebody's a billionaire that the opinion of somebody who isn't rich should be dismissed. And I actually think some billionaires and millionaires would be better off listening to their customers more instead of showing up at work thinking, because I'm so rich and I drive a nice car, I have all the answers. And I think there's many times Vince McMahon would have been better off for that. I mean, I don't know how, if we're going to have time to get to our emails, but, you know, Zach from Texas said, you know, to quote the great Tony Schiavone, this is the greatest day in the history of our sport. Kennedy McMahon is finally at long last gone. There are going to be people who are happy about that because they feel he wasn't listening to them. He wasn't giving them the product that they wanted for the longest time. So that was one thing I'd say, Deke, to that. But go ahead and
you know, Wade, you're right. You're right. And no, that's the wrong thing to say. That's the wrong thing. But you know what I was getting at, and I said it the wrong way. But look at what Vince did. I mean, he was taking. If you believe, if this, you tell me. You're the wrestling journalist. Like, he's taking mortgages against other things, and hey, if WrestleMania didn't work, he was toast and all this. Like, if that's true, you know, this guy built it. And what I meant was he built a monster on his own. And so, no one – I had – my roommate in college was a millionaire, and he told everyone, you know what, man? The world needs ditch diggers too. So – and we do. We need everybody. So you know what, man? Thank you for calling that out, man. And I apologize for that. And I did not mean that in any way. But point being made, this man made himself a billionaire. That's I should have said that better. So, you know, thank you for calling that out, man. I should have said that better. But this man made him, not like he was unsuccessful before. It's not like his dad had an unsuccessful company, but then he turned it into what he turned it into. That's what I was getting at. So I apologize for that. The other question was for you, Wade, and you kind of touched on it a little bit, but can you blur the lines a little bit? And maybe you don't want to, and if you don't want to, tell me. Between a journalist and a fan, you've been there.
Deke, we're losing your connection. I don't know if you moved your headset or what, but
yeah,
now you're back.
I'm sorry, bro.
Now you're back.
You got me? 23 years old. How old were you when you covered the trials? You know, however old you were, you've been doing this since you were in college. Through everything that's gone down, how surprised are you? How shocked are you that this is how it happened? Because – man, these articles, we all talked about it, man, didn't seem to faze him, which makes me think that another bombshell is coming out in the next week or two. Yeah. How shocked are you? Can you blur the lines a little bit from a journalist and just a fan as a person? Like, today, how did this happen today? This is the way it went down. Do you understand what I'm saying? Can you explain that? Because you know better than anybody, because you were there for the trials. You were there for all the other stuff. For this to bring him down, and on a random Friday, a week before SummerSlam, I mean, can you walk me through your day a little bit? And that's all I got
cool
for you.
Deke,
I love you, brother, and thanks for everything.
Thanks.
Go VIP.
Yes, thank you. The cool part is I found out when the record button was hit, recording Everything with Rich Fan today, the VIP podcast, Everything with Rich and Wade. It was just a few minutes into the podcast and Rich interrupted. We're going to start talking about Titus O'Neil and how to interpret what that portended about Vince McMahon, because I wrote in my Raw report Monday and talked about on the post show that Titus speech made me think something was on the horizon, but Vince McMahon knew he couldn't go on TV or was told he can't go on TV. So he sent Titus out there for either a damage control speech or a farewell speech. This probably was in the works and the date was approaching and Vince probably kicked it down the road as much as he could. Based on what happened on Monday with Titus, that's not how you open Raw for any reason other than we need to remind people about the happier times and the good aspects of WWE and the entertainment we brought. And it felt like Vince McMahon through the vessel of Titus O'Neil being given talking points in a script. Plus it's Tampa and he did charity work that day. So it worked out conveniently to let people know, no matter what you hear about me, no matter what you've heard, or perhaps, and this is the big question, what you hear next, just remember my heart was in the right place in a lot of ways. And you know what? Nope. Very few people are as bad as the worst character trait or worst decision they make in life. And nobody is perfect as their greatest moment. And Vince McMahon is a complicated person. There's people who know him well, who despise him and love him at once, or are greatly disappointed and also greatly respect him and are conflicted. People are conflicted about him. Vince Russo, when I interviewed him for the Ultimate Insiders DVD, when I sat down with him and Ed Ferrara talking about the McMahon years, he's like, I feel so betrayed. You know, Vince was giving credit to Shane McMahon for the Attitude Era, and Shane did nothing in articles, and we didn't get writing credits, and then he has a SmackDown in addition to Raw, and we didn't get a pay bump or a phone call asking how we felt about it, but I love the man, and he's like a father to me. It's like, what? How do those two things reconcile? So you hear this from so many different people, and that's who Vince was. He was complicated. He was powerful, and that played into it, and now he's still the majority shareholder, as he pointed out, but he has a lot less power, and it's going to be really interesting how freely people speak about him. How different would Brian Gewirtz's book be that's coming out the middle of next month? I've already read it. I got the advanced media copy, and I've been wondering how different will that – maybe there'll be a final version that's different or an updated version. If Brian wasn't thinking, Vince still is in a position of power, how will wrestling books be written differently now that somebody who wants to be in the Hall of Fame and have that Hall of Fame speech moment – well, that's not going to be a decision Vince makes anymore. So now how do people talk on podcasts? Do people come up? So all that is at play. I don't know if another story is coming out or if the decision had already been kind of made, the wheels were in motion, but that Titus O'Neil thing makes me think Vince knew it was happening. And I'll go back a couple hours here on the show, Mike. The fact that he didn't make it to MSG on Monday, it's to me, it's so telling. So your thoughts on what DK had to say?
Yeah, you know, you obviously have a lot more, you know, inside information about that kind of stuff than I do. But, yeah, it's just I never thought that I would really see this day happen where Vince McMahon willingly stepped down. And I agree with you. I think that, you know, the Titus O'Neil thing was just so strange that, you know, I didn't know if it was just another situation of Vince kind of puffing his chest out and saying, you know, like, no matter what comes out, I'm not going to be deterred by this, and we're just going to keep pushing along, and I'm reminding you how great WWE is and how many great times we've given you, and we're just going to keep pushing forward, or if it meant something else. But, you know, obviously it meant something else. And, yeah, I think that Vince was initially, you know, just kind of defiant about the whole thing, and then as more things came out, it became tougher and tougher, I think, to kind of just turned a blind eye to it. And again, it's certainly possible that more stuff is going to come out as well, because it has been said that, you know, in addition to all these reports that we've had, the four payments and non-disclosure agreements, that, you know, maybe the Wall Street Journal you know, writers were going to start actually talking to some other people who were involved in this, specifically female employees of the past with WWE, female wrestlers. And, you know, that could open up a whole other can of worms. And, you know, I think that that probably is part of why Vince decided, all right, now is probably the time to get out of Dodge before it gets even worse than it is. Like, his reputation in the eyes of a lot of people, I think, has been tarnished. But I think he wanted to get out probably before any more damage was done in that respect. So, yeah, you know, I just think that there, he, as you said, I think that he did try to prolong this as long as he could and hope that maybe it would blow over and people would forget about it or stop talking about it. But I think that avalanche just kind of continued and it snowballed, and there was really no getting out of it this time.
All right. Moving on to Sean and Murfreesboro. Sean, thank you so much for holding so long. We've had a lot of people calling up, some who we don't normally hear from. I felt bad leaving you as a regular on hold this long, but I appreciate you sticking with us. I am curious, now that you've heard so much of the show, to get your take on things.
Well, first of all, I would say, Wade, I'll never hang up on you. At first, I was going to say, too, I love that new people get on, especially knowing this has happened today. Like, this is a crazy day. So I'm glad a lot of people are actually giving their insight and asking questions about it, because it's a day we'll never see again in wrestling. So it's unless Tony Khan gets bigger than Vince and he retires or something, but that, I don't know if that's going to happen, but we'll see. But I appreciate all everybody's thoughts on it. Javier, man, your time's coming, man. I know, I promise it's coming. It really is. I'm curious to hear what he thinks too. But as far as Vince goes, I was actually on the chat when Zach and Tyler on the fireside chat when it happened, and Zach was just, his reaction was great and my reaction was great. But I don't know. I think as far as the fans tonight, it is really hard because, again, like if I'm going, like if I was there, I'm going to put myself there that tonight. If I was there, I wouldn't have chanted thank you, Vince. I definitely would not have chanted that. But again, like there's the wrestlers, like everything's going on there. Like you're into it. Again, Vince has done what he's done, whatever you think that is. I hate what he's done. If everything's true, I hate it. And I think most of it is true. I mean, at least from what we've heard. And I hate it that that's happened. But so I wouldn't have chanted it. But I don't – when you're in a fan there, I'm not going to get on them for – Stephanie had a real moment tonight. I think it was genuine. And I think it was just like, just get it over with. Get out of your system for a minute. And I think it was fine. So that's kind of my two cents on that. Vince, like, being gone, I mean, I'm happy. I think – over time, things will slowly begin to change creatively and hopefully, like I said, in a better way. Like, I hope there's a way they can get promos less scripted. Yeah, there's going to be a script in some ways, but I hope they can I hope the wrestlers can start to feel more authentic and more who they really are as people when they're in their character. And that's what I'm really hoping for after this and in the next year or two when things develop. What do you guys think about that real quick?
Yeah, Sean, that's just like, again, when a previous caller asked how my day went and how I processed this, and as I talked about, I found out live, or not live on the, we're in live casting, but recording with Rich, and I was just like, wow, and I was like, okay, is this true? Let me look at this Vince tweet. Is it a, and I was like, yes, he really did tweet that, and I mean, I'm not to answer. I think it was Deke's question. I'm not surprised. Because this is something we've been talking about the last few weeks, last month. Could this day happen soon because of all the allegations and more than allegations, the actual documented payments that no one said didn't happen.
Right.
So in a way I was prepared, but, and for, since he, turned 65, I probably have been thinking about this day more, just you get to the kind of a typical retirement age for a lot of people and you think, okay, health or burnout or a personal decision could lead to the end of Vince McMahon in power. So, you kind of prepare for the day, but when the moment comes, there's this flood of all the cascade of thoughts about how this affects so many things. Even like I said, how will books be written differently now? Will people talk about Vince McMahon as a Hall of Fame? He didn't allow it before. Well, now that'd be allowed. Will it be a Vince McMahon love fest, or will people be like, yeah, this guy's damaged, People aren't – again, I'm not saying he's Harvey Weinstein, but I'm not saying there's not some comparisons there either. People don't go at the Oscars and just gush about Harvey Weinstein's contributions to the art of film because of the way he left. So that's a big thing. What is his legacy? How is he talked about? It's there's people who have shameful exits, and it really does affect how their art is looked at going backwards, reflecting. And that is a lot to process. And the feeling I get is a lot of people are going through that in the business right now. I have to be super vague, but I know somebody who was going to make a big career decision, and it is regarding pro wrestling, and that they're going to change the timing of that right now because of it. Like, so I just want to be vague about it because I don't want to obviously tip off or break confidence. But like, I that's an example. Somebody was going to do some, make a big decision, mm-hmm. and now they're going to hold off on it. So that's going on in a lot of ways because of this. I think there's some people really relieved and really worried and all that. Sean, I don't even know what your question was. I think I was answering Deeks more than yours. Mike, go ahead with what Sean said and respond to it.
Yeah, well, I know that at the end he had mentioned, creatively his hopes for what this might mean and, you know, whether, you know, less scripting of promos and giving more freedom to the wrestlers and that type of thing. I think that's a possibility at some point. Although we kind of talked about it, I think it's going to be a slow transition because you still have people who are, you know, Vince McMahon appointed people in charge, your Bruce Prichards and your Kevin Dunns and that type of stuff. So as long as they are in these positions of power, I don't necessarily know if that's going to happen so much. But if they start to be phased out or moved into different spots and you have more influence from Stephanie McMahon and Triple H, then, you know, I think that's a possibility. At the same time, I think that they were kind of fostered in the same environment where there was a lot of scripting and that type of thing. So they might have some level of loyalty to it. But I think they would be a lot more willing to be flexible with that type of situation than Vince McMahon. You know, we know, like, Vince, he'll micromanage situations, and he wants it just so and exactly how he wants it to be. Maybe Stephanie and Triple H aren't quite like that. And if you have somebody who is a top star or, you know, becoming a top star, and they've shown aptitude on the mic and the ability to cut a promo and to do it effectively and with bullet points rather than just a straight-up script, then maybe they'll give them the freedom to do that. So I do think that's a possibility. I think we could see that evolution over time, but I don't think that's something that, you know, we're going to see right out of the gates. I think that's going to be something that it's going to take weeks or months or even years to maybe see that.
Sean, back to you.
Well, first I was going to say, too, Mike, it's good to talk to you, man. It's been a long time. How are you?
Yeah, you too. How you doing?
No, doing well. I do want to get back to the show real quick. I had a few things I wanted to bring up about the show. I know we haven't been able to talk about it a whole lot just because everything is going on, I understand. But yeah. The show was definitely not good. I didn't enjoy it at all, really. And, Mike, like, I've been kind of down on SmackDown now for a while. I just think it's been very, very weak. Roman's, the times he's been on it, has saved it. But other than that, I have not really enjoyed where they've been going. Wade, you obviously chime in, but I know kind of what you thought a little bit already. But as far as, like, Lacey Evans and the whole, number one, are we ever going to have the Lacey Evans-Aaliyah match? Which, I mean, I don't know if anybody cares, per se. I don't know if, I mean, we're going to have it next week, supposedly, but I don't know.
Yeah.
But what do you think? I want to know definitely what Mike thought. And Wade, you know, chime in what you're kind of thinking after this week. But I'm not liking Lacey's character at all right now. I just think it's pretty awful. I mean, she's better as a heel than as a babyface. There's no doubt about that. I mean, if you're going to choose one, definitely choose heel. But I know she's trying to get heel heat by, you know, talking the whole time, and you're supposed to be annoyed. But I'm, like, pissed now. Like, get off my – like, stop talking. Just get to the freaking match. Like, we don't care. We want you want our respect. Well, we're not going to give it to you, you know, kind of thing. Like, what have you guys thought about just everything they've done with Lacey these last couple weeks? Because I just think it's gotten real bad.
Yeah, Mike, what do you think?
Yeah, I think the previous couple of weeks was really bad. I think she was almost flustered by a lack of crowd reaction and was just kind of stuck in certain spots, and it just didn't work at all. I do think she was better this week, and I think it's because there was actually, you know, a good crowd in Boston that was reacting to stuff, and, you know, she was getting the heel heat and they were booing, and I think she felt a little bit more comfortable and competent and did a better job. But with that said, overall, I haven't liked the direction. I think that, you know, spending all that time to build her up as a sympathetic babyface and then doing the old switcheroo and making her heel, like, it just felt like such a waste of investment in all those vignettes and her telling these stories to do that and then just go back to being a heel, which is what she was before she left anyways. So I think that I would have tried her as a babyface and, you know, this called her an American hero and talked about her military background and talked about how she overcame all the stuff like she talked about in the vignettes and at least given that a try before you go back to the heel persona. Because if you're going to have the heel persona, I just preferred what she was before. I thought she had a good character and a good theme song and played the role well, you know, good ring attire, all that kind of stuff. She was unique. I would have just went back to that rather than doing this, or at the very least, given her a chance to be a babyface and seen where that would go after you spent all that time playing those vignettes and getting fans to actually kind of feel some kind of, you know, sympathy or affection towards her, instead of doing what they did.
All right, Sean, anything else you want to bring up?
The Liv and Ronda stuff, which Justin kind of brought up, and I didn't really care for it either. Do you guys think that, I know they have next Friday, but do you think they should have been in front of the audience? Because I think it might have been a little better in front of the fans. Like, I just, the backstage stuff like that, I just never really care for it, especially in a big title feud like that. Do you guys think they should have done it in front of fans?
I'm curious if they pre-recorded that and if they were concerned about just Ronda being Ronda and Liv being kind of green, if they felt like it would be good to have a chance to do a retake. So that crosses my mind. I think if you pay money to go to SmackDown, you can watch it on TV at home. But you want to see Ronda and come out in person, and she's there. You would want your top stars on a show as thin as this, as far as that aspect went, to be in front of the fans as much as possible, I would think. So I know a lot goes into that decision making, but people want to see the Ronda Rousey entrance and the theme song, and it's a curious choice. And all I can think of is they wanted to keep it short, and maybe they wanted to pre-record it. Mike, how about you?
Yeah, I will say this, Wade. I saw on Twitter that after Sonya Deville's match, she said, "Oh, I'm not leaving this ring. Nobody's going to make me leave this ring." And then in a dark segment during a commercial, Ronda came out and beat her up. So fans did get to see her.
That's good.
But in terms of whether it should have been in front of the crowd or not, the promo segment, I'm of the mind it doesn't really matter. I just think they're not clicking. It's not working. The roles they have them in, them going up against each other, doesn't. I just think that they're struggling really badly on the mic. It's possible it could have been even worse in front of a crowd. So I get why they would want to maybe have that opportunity to fine tune it, because, even if that was fine tuned, then I shudder to think what might have happened if it was, live mics in front of the crowd. At this point, I'm of the mind, I think you got to turn Ronda heel, because her best work, I think, was as a heel leading up to WrestleMania 35. Maybe put her with Shayna and Natty in a stable or something like that, and see what happens there. Because I just think that her as the babyface and cutting these babyface promos, I don't think it's working.
Sean, anything else you want to
call?
Yeah, the last quick thing, last question, was going back to Drew Sheamus. Kind of, number one, are you guys excited they're finally having the match now? Which, Mike, for Sheamus to not want to have a championship contenders match or to have a title shot for 4 weeks, to me, just makes you look stupid. It makes you look really, really dumb. And Sheamus, I like Sheamus, but this is just a terrible vision for what they've thought of this last month with him. But going back to Drew, I know, Wade talked about, we kind of talked a lot last week about Drew kind of thinking the babyface run might be getting to the end with him, just because, they just booked him, I think, really poorly in the last year, really poorly. But I think he could do – he's a great babyface to me. I love the vigor he comes out with. I'm glad the sword's going to be gone next week. Thank God. Maybe they'll get rid of it altogether. But, what have you guys – just overall with Drew, is there any hope of him as a babyface? Because I think that's – he's better as a babyface. So what do you guys think about that, Wade? I appreciate all you've done. I'm going to listen to you and Rich talk about Vince a lot, and I'm just glad to hear a lot of the content about Vince, and I'm excited to hear it. And then, Mike, glad you're back, man. It's always good to talk to you. Thank you guys for taking my call, as always.
Excellent. Thank you. Thank you, Sean. Appreciate it. Check out Zach Ador and Tyler Sage, too, because they did their fireside chat and when the Vince McMahon news broke, too. That's available on our PW Torch YouTube channel. So search PW Torch on YouTube, and you can see how they reacted to the news about 7 minutes into the show breaking. They were recording the same time Rich and I were recording. Mike, so any follow-up or any thoughts on what Sean had to say there at the end?
I'm sorry, what was the topic? Sorry, I lost track.
My mind just went blank too, Sean. Forgive me, because this is a long show and a long day. Well,
wait, 2 weeks in a row? Yeah, come on, so 2 weeks in a row.
No. No, I got it. Sorry. You're so – never mind.
All good.
Thank you.
Go ahead, Mike.
Thank you. I think the match will be great because they have really good in-ring chemistry. They beat the hell out of each other. I think the gimmick's kind of fun, like the Shillelagh, Irish Donnybrook match or whatever. It'll be a good match. Drew's obviously going to win the match. In terms of Drew as a babyface, like, I think he is a really good babyface. I think he's likable. I think he does a good job with what he's given, but I do think that he's been given garbage for a while now. Like, the sword thing does not do him any favors. I understand, like, give him the sword, the kids will think it's cool, you'll sell action figures, all that type of deal. I understand that, but I think it's taken away, like, from some of that, like, badass appeal that he had, and that's what made him, made the people get behind him leading up to him winning the Royal Rumble and then being Brock at WrestleMania. Like, he was a heel, and then he was, like, kind of a quasi, like, tweener type thing, and then the fans just got behind him, and he became a babyface. I think you need to get back to more of that, just him, kicking ass and taking names and being that type of babyface, not Stone Cold Steve Austin per se, but in that type of mold. And I think that he could have success that way. My thought is, as badly as they've been booking him, they have largely been protecting him. And I think that's for a reason. My expectation is he's going to win the championship at Clash of the Castle in Wales. I think that, they've been waiting for a moment like this. He unfortunately didn't have that moment when he beat Brock at WrestleMania because there was no fans in attendance. And I think they've been waiting to give him an opportunity to have that big win in front of fans. And I think, obviously, him doing it in the first European pay-per-view in 30 years, that's the time to do it. And I think he will do it. So I think they're committed to him as, their top babyface, or at least one of them, moving forward. My hope is just that they get away from the gimmicky stuff like the sword and let him be what he was when he became a top guy initially and had that level of success, which is, a no frills type of guy. And, if you do that, I think you can have success.
All right. Very good. Deep breath. We're done with callers. Mike, I don't know if you signed up for a 3-hour show. When you decided
I've done 7-hour shows before. I'm all right.
Good. All right. Good. So, we're well past the 2.5-hour mark here. Haven't gotten to emails. I apologize to our emailers. We may or may not incorporate much of those in to the show as we finish up here, but definitely make it time for Javier. Javier Machado, PW Torch VIP contributor on the New Japan G1 beat. This month, Javier, thanks for holding. Thanks for calling.
I've heard a lot since the last time I hear. There's a theme song now.
Javier, welcome.
Hey, Mike, I'm really happy you're on, Mike, because you want to talk about happenstance. You mentioned it 2 hours 40 minutes ago. Today I was discussing an article I had just read with my brother, and I'm like, oh, I wonder who wrote this. And I looked, it was you. I was reading Bleacher Report.
There you go.
And I'm like, I told my brother, man, it's been a while since I've heard Mike on the post show. Sure enough,
it was meant to be.
You're on today. Yeah, it was kismet, man. Interesting day. I thought it was a disappointing end to an era, really. I was fully expecting that a rift would open up in the earth and the legions of hell would spill out and drag Vince McMahon into the abyss while he frantically rewrote SmackDown today. Did not expect it to be a tweet.
Javier? Mike, can you hear Javier?
Yeah, I can hear him.
Oh, there you are. Oh, Javier, did you – for a second there, I couldn't hear him. Did you hear him the whole time and I interrupted him?
I heard him the whole time.
Oh, wow. That's weird. Well, you cut out on my mic, Javier. So pick up where you left off. Sorry about that.
Yeah, well, So basically, like, it ended in a tweet that, and that's pretty much the end of an era. I mean, if you asked if you would be, Vince, I would, just, despite you know, the other, you know, the allegations and stuff like that, I would, just because, you know, of the history and the, you know, the era and, you know, spending, you know, since I think I became a fan because of WrestleMania 4, like a real, you know, that's when I was fully on board on the wrestling fandom. I had seen before, but it was, you know, that was a very big, and I remember being in high school and during the Attitude Era, and narrowing, you know, I didn't wear shirts, but the school I went to had, you know, some fights over NWO versus Austin 316 shirts. So, you know, it was it's a thing. So, but I think that the most amazing thing, and you didn't, I don't know if you caught this, Wade. I think that, no hyperbole, I think we might, Cole might have said the most ridiculous thing, no hyperbole, ever said on air.
About Sonya.
He said, so you did catch it. I don't believe anyone in the WWE has abused their power as much as Sonya Deville. And, you know, not only like the history of the WWE, but also with the allegations, that was just, I mean, that was, I think the kids are calling it a Chad move. That was just incredible that was said with a straight face.
Did you catch that, Mike?
Wait.
I didn't specifically hear that, but that is pretty funny. You know, from like a kayfabe perspective, I mean, I certainly wouldn't even put her at the top, but I guess you could say, maybe you just say she's really abused her power to a high degree during her time as SmackDown general manager or whatever she was. But yeah, I didn't actually specifically hear that.
My hunch is Cole realized after he said it, or maybe McAfee gave him a look. I don't think Cole said it with that in mind. I think he was doing what announcers do, which is whatever is most recent and we're trying to make money with is the biggest deal. But it is not great judgment, and you would hope that doesn't happen too often with Michael, where he says something without an eye on current events.
He didn't know what to say. He didn't have Vince in his ear.
Yeah. Yeah. Yeah.
The and I think he has been mispronouncing the Tejada Bomb, because again, I heard Tejada Bomb with a D, and then he went back. It seemed like he went back and corrected it. So
it's an homage to Miguel Tejada. That's what it's named after.
The other thing I want to talk about was the way that they've been using Ludwig Kaiser. I haven't been a fan of it, because he looks like he looks like he could be a threat. And instead of having two wrestlers in him and Gunther that can be threats, you basically end up using Kaiser as a tool to get over Gunther, as opposed to, you know, get them both over. Because they could have, you know, Kaiser be a threat, and, you know, and if he's that dangerous, you know, how dangerous is the guy behind him who's not even fighting? Instead, they basically made him a tool where, you know, he's basically just, you know, they reduce him to a level of sidekick and, you know, and essentially a tool. So he's not really even a person. He's just there to get Gunther over. And I think it's a waste of, you know, talent, because, you know, eventually, you know, later on you could actually do this and then have, you know, when he's built some credibility and then lead into, you know, a face turn for Ludwig and then, you know, face Gunther. But instead of, you know, planning for the future, it feels like they're just basically using the character, instead of, you know, building that character, he's just there to, you know, as just like a prop, basically.
Yeah, Mike, what have you thought of that?
Yeah, I'm not really a big fan of the, you know, thing they've been going to recently, which is like Gunther kind of like punishing him and chopping him and that type of deal, and kind of making Ludwig Kaiser look like I don't know, just so meek and, like, afraid of him. Like, I liked what they did initially, which was just Ludwig Kaiser is, like, his hype man. He announces him to the ring, and he's, you know, essentially a manager who can also wrestle. Like, I think that was a fine, you know, spot for him. I don't really like what they're doing, and I didn't like what they did tonight in terms of you're building up Shinsuke, I would think, to be a threat to beat Gunther for the IC title. I understand there was interference and everything, but to have him lose to Ludwig Kaiser, who's just being booked to be kind of, you know, like Gunther's, you know, whipping boy, essentially, like it doesn't make any sense to me. Like, I would have had Shinsuke win that match, and then Shinsuke's getting built up, and then you could have him face Gunther for the IC title either at SummerSlam or a subsequent episode of SmackDown, and that would be a great match. And, you know, a former IC champion against the current dominant IC champion, two people are really well liked in among, you know, casual wrestling fans, among internet wrestling fans. Like, you can't go wrong. But then you have Shinsuke lose the match just to further this angle that you really don't need to be even furthering, I feel like. So I just think that the booking of that entire situation, especially tonight, didn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
Javier, what else?
Yeah, it felt like the spotlight is all on it. Even I'm glad you mentioned Shinsuke, because yeah, it feels like Shinsuke was there more to serve to get Gunther over than to really make you excited for any match that the two of them can have with each other. Because if Shinsuke overcame the cheating, that makes him even more of a threat. So yeah, I just thought it was a miss altogether. What do you suspect they're doing with this whole Pierce and Deville thing? Do you think this might be to prep for a redraft where maybe she gets one of the two brands and he gets the other?
And could that lead to the titles being split again, where Sonya books one title match, Pierce books another, the compromise we have both, but only one belt is on the line at a time, something along those lines too. That it just crossed my mind, like, why would Sonya be angling for power again, and they're playing this up if there wasn't, maybe it's not larger than them. Maybe the writers just are like, we like the dynamic between them. We miss it, and let's go back to it. What do you think, Mike? Is there something bigger going on?
My initial thought was probably really isn't leading to anything. I think maybe your idea is the most plausible, just like because they did have a good dynamic when it was Adam Pearce running things and Sonya was kind of like second in command or whatever. Like, I have decent banter, and I think that they, you know, are just kind of going to that. I almost feel like they just don't have anything really for Sonya, because they've just been throwing her out there in random matches, taking losses, you know, getting quote unquote punished by Adam Pearce for her actions, and, you know, just going through that endless cycle again and again and again. I almost feel like they're just kind of in a holding pattern waiting for something more substantial to do with her. So I'm not really, I don't know that it's going to really lead to her attempting to take control of the show or, you know, getting control of Raw or anything like that. To me, and this happens a lot in WWE, and it happens to other companies too, but especially WWE, sometimes you don't really have something for somebody and you just kind of put them in these types of situations where it's a Groundhog's Day and you're getting almost the same thing over and over again until they're finally moved into something else. I think Sonya's kind of finding herself in that spin cycle right now.
Javier, anything else for us?
Yeah, I just want to make sure that I've got the timeline right, since I'll be writing the primer for SummerSlam for next week. I want to make sure I got this timeline right. So there was a referee screw up in the last pay per view, and then miraculously a couple days later there's another referee screw up that we never see. And the answer to the referee screw-ups is to put someone that barely refereed to be the referee, because he's gonna get it right.
No, well, and then tonight's, and you know, this should be higher on the subject list on a normal day. Jeff Jarrett explains, "Well, I can't be bought off, and the Street Profits tried to buy me off."
I forgot about that, but I like was so taken aback when he said that. I'm like, the babyface tag team tried to give you payola to unfairly referee the match in their favor?
yeah, he threw the Street Profits under the bus to justify being appointed special referee. I was like, what?
That made me think, like, he's a heel and he's just going to do something to screw over the Street Profits, to be honest with you. Because that's obviously not something they would do within, you know, the structure of their character.
Yeah.
It was weird.
I actually missed that part. I got to go back and watch that because I was having troubles with my stream because it was raining pretty badly during the show. So I was having problems with the stream. There was one point which was great where things became desynced, so the audio was coming in like a few seconds before the video. So I was getting future Michael Cole calling moves before they would happen. So that was kind of a bit of a mind thing. I think that's pretty much all I got. Although, am I the only one? Probably am. Am I the only one who's praying that on the Monday Night Raw, everything is in black and gold and the show starts off with death metal?
Or Poppy, perhaps.
Poppy.
She might be back in the good graces of the company. It was a good day for Poppy.
I don't think we're going to see Poppy. That's all I'll say. Someone else may have a say in that. WWE Loco could get a lot busier, Javier.
I mean, you know, because I know I assume you're not much of a metal guy, Wade, but that was like my favorite thing about NXT. Since, you know, I am. I always got a little rankled whenever you started attacking the black and gold and the music. So, I'm kind of hoping that all of a sudden we get rebranded and run to NXT, you know, NXT Raw. That would be an interesting change if changes happen fast. That's all I had, and it is way past midnight, and I'm about to pass out. what a day! Just check out the New Japan Pride podcast. I'm covering the G1, 32, not 31, as I believe I accidentally wrote on the for the thing, because I pulled away and I did a cut and paste and forgot to change the numbers.
I do that for the Raw date sometimes. Yeah, in my website reports, I'll cut and paste the headline and then alter the matches, but I forget to change the date, and I'm like, I'll discover it like a week later. Yeah. And I'm like, why didn't someone tell me?
This time I missed an entire one on the G1, so I was writing G131 everywhere. 32. I'm like, wait a minute.
Yeah,
that doesn't sound right. And I think I have the date as December 28th. I didn't change the date either. So that's pretty much all I had. So check that out and check out the primer when closer to SummerSlam. So have a good night, guys.
Cool. Thanks, Javier. Appreciate it. Mike, time for plugs. And I'm going to try to remember to move this earlier in the show in the final version, because I feel bad leaving it to the very end here.
I assume everybody has stayed the entire 3 hours and they will love to hear what I have to say.
Well, I hope so. Although I just saw, some callers start dropping off when I said time for plugs. So, although our live window has just expired, that doesn't happen much these days, our 3-hour window.
It was a Broadway tonight.
Totally. All right, Mike, tell people how they can hear more from you and read more from you other than the once every 10 months you're on with me. No, it'll be more often than that, I hope. And by the way, I've invited you on other times. It just didn't work out. It's not like I haven't checked in, so I want to be.
Yeah, the last time we talked earlier in the year, I had COVID, and it was a pretty bad bout. I was sick for like a month, so. And then we just kind of, other things happened, but I was happy you reached out, and I was glad to come on tonight and talk about this, obviously, because crazy day in wrestling. But, anybody who is a fan of wrestling, you can check me out on Twitter at Mike Chiari, Chiari, and Ring Rust Radio on Twitter at Ring Rust Radio. Ring Rust Radio airs every Tuesday night on Spreaker or anywhere you get your podcasts. You know, myself, my co-host, Donald Wood, Brandon Galvin, I've been doing it for about 10 years, and we just talk about all things in wrestling. Obviously, this coming week's going to be a big show. A lot of talk about the Vince McMahon situation, you know, the Brock Lesnar situation, SummerSlam coming up. But, you know, we like talk all things WWE, AEW, other wrestling companies, try to put our own entertaining spin on things. And also, we're going to have an interview airing that I did with Montez Ford of the Street Profits this week ahead of his match at SummerSlam. You can also find me at BleacherReport.com, writing about wrestling and all other things sports, and my interview with Montez Ford. I also have an article up for that on Bleacher Report coming up this week. So if you're at all inclined, check that out.
All right. Thank you, Mike. Great having you on. You didn't know what you're signing up for, but I didn't know what I was in for today when I got up and started the workday. So
very true.
Quite the day, you know, and like I said earlier, I thought this day would come, and I didn't know, you know, if it was going to be health related or board of director related or, you know what? I mean, you just don't know, but you know, Vince is a lot older than me. I figured he'd retire before me. And the day has arrived, and really we had basically a month warning, you know, with everything going on that this could happen. But, I'll just close on this note. I think he would have lasted till Monday's Raw at MSG if there wasn't something else coming out. Mm-hmm. And does him retiring now preclude that from coming out? Perhaps this is part of the negotiation for, you know, some women to not go public who have already made allegations anonymously or some new allegations to come out. And one name we haven't brought up this whole show, and I didn't bring it up with everything with Rich on that 90-minute show earlier, is Linda McMahon. You know, do Linda and Vince get actually divorced as opposed to just sort of living separate lives, or does this bring them together? I doubt it, but you know, I mean, who knows? Honestly, marriages, people, relationships are complicated. You never know what goes on.
Well, he's gonna have a lot of spare time, so.
Yeah, you know, he might, I mean, honestly, in like a week, he might go, Linda, I miss you, I love you, let's go travel the world, and they rekindle, you know, their 20s. I don't know, but she is a major player in this. She was a top fundraiser for Donald Trump while he was president, and after we knew so many things about him, she was still there raising money to try to get him reelected to end our democracy, and, you know, Vince and Linda might have a lot that they share in common in that regard. So,
perhaps a renewal of vows on an upcoming Raw or something like that.
Or at a Trump rally.
Or at SummerSlam, you know, like Macho Man and Miss Elizabeth.
You're avoiding my politics here at the end.
Oh, no, I agree with your politics. Don't worry about that.
I'm just saying, you're like, you know, oh, I'm just going to keep it light and I'm getting all heavy, but... But I say that because it's like if they were very different politically, I could imagine that completely being the end of them. But, I think a lot of relationships are thriving through these Trump years based on either mutual admiration and loyalty or, you know, fear and amazement, to put it nicely, that he persists. And they, you know, you gripe together every day about it. So. I joke that, you know, it's just who knows what brings them together or separates them, and whatever Vince has done, who knows what Linda's done. So maybe they just air their baggage, and I don't know. There's other people involved here. You know, we brought up Shane, figured to bring up Linda. And the grandkids, you know, how do they – I mean, a wrestler texted me about that. Like, you know, I mean, I think they're all minors still, but they're going to know about this. The kids at school are going to talk about it. And, you know, they love their grandpa and have great times with Vince. And Vince loves being a grandpa. And, you know, we all have complicated relationships. You know, I think most people do with their siblings, their parents, their grandparents. And it's not all rosy. And this is going to, you know, this is a factor for Vince. You know, it's one thing, you know, your kids know who, you know, live with you and you raise them, know everything about you or, you know, so much about you. You find out a lot of stuff that maybe isn't great. But grandkids, it's like grandma and grandpa, they're perfect. They're just fun. And they're going to grow up with this, and Vince has to live with, you know, stepping down in the midst of scandal. There's so many, you know, personal and business angles to all this. It's and a lot to still play out. But who knows? Maybe he ceases to become a public figure, you know, and we just don't really hear from him again.
Yeah, I just have a hard time envisioning that. But I had a hard time envisioning this day coming in this way, too. So I guess you never really know anymore.
Yeah. Well, anyway, thanks, Mike. Appreciate it. It's been really interesting, and I'm glad we had you on the show. Is there anything I didn't bring about SmackDown or Vince that you just didn't have a chance to fit in?
I can't imagine. I feel like we had to hit everything, right?
No, we did. We probably didn't, but I just feel bad if you're like, oh yeah, I keep meaning to bring this up, and I did. So I like to ask that at the end.
No, I don't
even
think
a 3-hour show.
I think this is a very, very well-rounded show, and I appreciate you having me on. You know, it was fun. It was fun for sure.
Yeah, yeah, cool. Well, best of luck, and we'll talk to you soon.
All right, sounds good. Thanks, Wade.
Yep. Thanks, everybody.